Good afternoon. I'm Tyler Danberg. Ohio State AD Ross Bjork met with the media today discussing his plans for significant improvements to the Woody Hayes Athletic Center. Bjork detailed the project includes expanding the football locker room, training room, and meeting room while building a new office complex and weight room. He said the project will cost about $125 million while it's 18 months from breaking ground. NBA Hornets are trading star LaMelo Ball and Josh Green of the Timberwolves for Naz Reid, a first-rounder, 3 seconds, and 3 first-round pick swaps. Wednesday, the Rockets chose Ohio State's Bruce Thornton with the first pick in the second round. Here's Thornton on what the biggest adjustment to the league will be.
Probably playing over 100 games in a year. There's a deep playoff team this year, so me just adjusting my body, having the time management skills to play over 100 games and try to win a championship.
This update is sponsored by Metal Supermarkets, your convenience store for metal. Visit Columbus at metalsupermarkets.com or 2180 Wilson Road for all your metal needs.
It's time to add some spice to your nooner. Nooner. Funny. This is the place where big-time guests, bold opinions, and little cute doggies come together. This is Rothman and Ice.
Sponsored by Pella Columbus, the number one rated windows and doors in Columbus.
All right, here we go. Big Thursday. Rothman and Ice. Dave Bittlin for the Iceman today. Good to see you, pal.
Great to see you, Anthony.
You were over at Ohio State. They did a little State of the State with Ross and the group, so we'll get to that today. We will have the Blue Jackets president of hockey ops and GM Don Waddell. The Big Don will be on at 12:45. He is doing a little Zoom, I believe, at the moment, but we'll get our chance two on one really with him at 12:45. And we'll see if he can tamp down some noise, clarify some things, reassure the fan base one way or another. And then we'll get into whether he is taking big swings and missing or what's happening here, because it feels like that's always been a struggle here with the Columbus Blue Jackets to take massive swings. And if you're going to take massive swings, you're going to have to package guys that you already like or a guy you like. So we'll see. But the big stuff, the big smoke does surround Zach Werenski, and we'll see if he tamps that down or not with us at 12:45. Don't miss that. We will have a Gold Jacket Thursday. Mike Haynes. Wait till he get his Haynes on you. I think this is one of those guys that the Patriots should have kept. He's a Hall of Fame DB, and now he split 14 years between the Pats and the LA Raiders at the time, but he had more games played, more picks, more Pro Bowl appearances in New England than he did with the Raiders. The difference is that it turned into a Super Bowl with the Raiders, and he went back to his native LA. And the Patriots did get a first round and a third round out of that trade, but they missed out on keeping one of the best corners in the game. And the only reason the trade wasn't a complete loss is because they got a guy that in 1984 named Irving Fryer. And Irving Fryer was, statistically, he was better in Miami, actually, but he had a lot of productive years in New England. But still, when you trade away a future Hall of Fame corner in his prime, it's probably a worse deal for the team that traded him away. So not only did he get his payday with the Raiders, but he's, I think, formed maybe the arguably the best corner tandem ever with Lester Hayes, and which directly, I think, correlated to a Super Bowl. So not a bad bit of business for the guy who liked to coin the phrase, just win, baby. And that would be Al Davis. So Mike Haynes at 2:30 on a Gold Jacket Thursday. Did you watch the second round of the NBA draft?
I did, and I was very happy to see Bruce Thornton go with the first pick of the second round. I was just initially hoping he'd be drafted in the second round.
Me too.
And every mock draft I saw that included a second round had him like in the middle of the second round. Some had him like kind of like more of the top half. I didn't see anything that had him going 31st overall, so I was very happy for Bruce last night.
Couple things. I'm very happy, and I'm a little surprised they traded up to get him, because I think they could have gotten him at 39. He was projected somewhere around 49.
Right.
So, which tells you a lot, which also is a great compliment to him, that they didn't feel they could wait, that they were worried, or they had to have him, and they wanted to make sure they got him. 3-time All-Big Ten, 4-time captain, very respected, a leader here, a competitor here, physical, not tall, but a physical guard, can get his shot, pull up, he's outstanding. From three, he's great. He can defend. And the weirdest thing about it for me when this all happens is that he's still wearing the Knicks hat when he's getting interviewed.
Isn't that dumb?
And I don't I guess that's the team that selected him.
It was like Scottie Pippen and back when they called him Scott Pippen. Yeah. And he's sitting there wearing the Sonics hat. And they had to inform him minutes after getting drafted, as he's having his first interview there with like five reporters. They're like, we hear you got traded to the Bulls for Olden Polynice. No, that pretty good trade for the Bulls there. And Scottie Pippen sitting there wearing the Sonics hat. I don't know why they do this. Like, I posted a story last night. Steve Hellwagon actually wrote it. It was in our admin. I just made it live and filled in the blanks. And I said, Houston Rockets select him. And technically it was the Knicks, but I was just like, you know, let's just be real here. That is strange when they do that. When it's, especially when it's not like a rumored deal, it's a finalized deal. So, yeah, going to the Houston Rockets, but technically was taken by the Knicks.
Yes.
And I think Brunson, speaking of the Knicks, I think the Jalen Brunson, and I don't think Bruce is going to be as good as Jalen Brunson, of course. That had to help a guy like Bruce. That had to help a guy. They had almost the same, like, height at the combine. Bruce is listed at 6'2", but without socks and bare feet, he's 6 foot, about the same as Jalen Brunson. I have to think that helps him a little bit, Anthony, because I would have lost a lot of money if you said that he's going to be the 30. If you told me right after Ohio State season, he's the all-time leading scorer at Ohio State, had a great year, great career, I was still thinking, man, is he even going to get drafted in the second round? If you would have told me he's going to be the 31st pick, I would have bet you a lot on that, and you would have added to your car collection because you would have won.
I feel like yesterday I said to Maddie, we did a percentage on this, and I had it at 60% that he even would be drafted in the second round. And then I also said that if it gets late in the second round, that he may get word out that he doesn't want to be drafted.
We heard some of that last night. Yeah, with agents saying they'd rather have their guy be an undrafted free agent than go late in the second round. I know, and him going 31st overall, awesome.
They traded up to get him. Like, they're sitting at 39. You're 8 picks away. Like, there must have been fear that somebody was going to get him, or that they said, no, we don't care. He's our guy. We're getting him, and we're doing what it takes. But when they selected him, it's just weird when he's doing the interview with that beautiful New York Knicks hat on. And I'm looking on Twitter and I'm seeing like, oh, the Knicks picked Bruce Thornton. No, he's not going to play there.
I saw some of my Cavs fans during the first round. They were excited they got Caravan. They're like, that's a good pick in the late. And then they're like, oh, we didn't get him. He's already been traded. Yeah, the NBA draft is fun. Like, or funny, I should say. I tell you what, being a Bulls fan, I don't know why I've stuck with them this long. This is by far the most I've been into the NBA draft in a long time. Bulls had 4 picks. Ended up they had 2 picks. They traded both of their second round picks, but I thought they did pretty good in the first round. I was hoping for Darius Acuff, but it wasn't like he went 5th or 6th. Oh, yeah, Caleb Wilson looks good. I like his attitude, too. And sometimes when they get guys from North Carolina, it works out pretty well for them.
That seems to have worked. One very good example. So Ross Bjork did a State of the State. What stood out to you?
There was a lot. There was nothing that was like groundbreaking. Like, I'm working on a story as we speak that I'm going to post later today. But there was a lot of good stuff. I mean, he spoke with us for a full hour. I really like Ross. I think, you know, he's the, in my opinion, like the ideal athletic director for Ohio State, like right now in this era of, you know, NIL and everything else is going on, you know, for a multitude of reasons. But he tends to like kind of roll with the punches. He's not a guy that's like, oh, I don't like this, so I'm just going to fight back against it. He kind of realizes even if maybe he doesn't like it, he's going to roll with it. So some of the things that stood out, let's start with the shot since we're talking basketball. They're not looking to build like a new basketball arena, but they are looking to improve the fan experience at the shot. And he's adamant if they can get somewhere between, you know, 12 to 16,000 fans as the average, which would be very good, that'd be really good for the, and he feels like the atmosphere can be good. And I would concur with that. I've been in the shot where you can't hear yourself think. I've also been in the shot where it feels like it's a museum. But like for big games where you have like either a sellout or close to a sellout, it can still be a good environment. They're thinking about doing some things, and he didn't get too specific, but doing some things to make it a more intimate environment, bringing fans closer to, you know, maybe doing something with the lower bowl. They're still looking into that. So something's going to be coming to the shot in a few years. I wouldn't expect anything in the next 2 years, Anthony. The next thing on the agenda, the next two things on the agenda, one is the new Woody, which is basically going to be a renovated Woody. And then the next thing after that is the ice arena. They want to build a new ice hockey arena. And, the interesting thing about the Woody is he says they want to break ground in 18 months. But it seems like it's key. I remember him saying last year they're hoping to break ground sometime this calendar year. So that's been pushed back a little bit. But they're hoping to break down or break ground in 18 months. He says it's going to be about a little less than $200 million project to renovate the Woody. And it's going to be a full renovation. The interesting thing, Anthony, is like when they do this renovation, the football team is going to be displaced for a little bit. Like, you know, their weight room is going to be, you know, transported maybe to like somewhere in the Fawcett Center. They're going to be, they'll have modules out there because when they're renovating all this stuff, all the coach's office, the team room, anything you can think of over there, they're going to be renovating that. So the Woody, they're hoping to break ground in about 18 months. He didn't give an exact timetable for the hockey arena, but that's the next one. So those are the two main things, is the Woody and the ice hockey arena. And I'd be remiss if I didn't say, obviously, Ohio Stadium. I like how he always articulates this. He always says, he's like, Ohio Stadium is always under construction, and it will be. It's right now it's under construction. It will be next year at this time. Every year they're going to add something, because they're not going to do a massive renovation to the horseshoe like we saw in 99-2000, but they're going to keep adding things every year. So a lot of good stuff from Ross. I'm leaving a lot on the cutting room table here that I'm sure we'll talk about through the show, but it was a lot about, he was asked about NIL and all that stuff and the chaos in college sports, and I just think he handles it well. He didn't give any absolutes. He says, you know, Ohio State's in a good position. They feel very good about where they're at. He feels like they've invested more now in men's basketball, football. They feel like they're, you know, if they're not at the top, they don't know what other programs are bringing in. Somebody asked, like, how do you compare to these other programs? And he was, even in men's basketball, we don't know for sure, but we've stepped it up a little bit in men's basketball. He feels like they're very competitive on the NIL front in men's basketball. And that's good news, Anthony, because we heard rumors that they were somewhere between 12th and 14th in NIL spending in the Big Ten in men's basketball last year.
There's a lot there.
Yes, there
I feel like the basketball thing's interesting to me because the atmosphere is, that's fine. You can try to, if you build it, they will come. But to me, it's the product. Because as you've said, when they were great, the place was packed. And I can hear all I want to hear about location and too far from campus and all that. It's the product. And I do feel like they're a little more in the middle of the cut line in the Big Ten now with NIL. Like, you'd love to get his definition truly of what is competitive. What does competitive mean to you in NIL and basketball specifics? Does that mean the cut line, top half? The other thing I believe, and this is a double-edged sword for Jake, is that sometimes if you look at this like a company, like, do you invest, do you give him what he needs, or do you prove that he can do it first? Like, it's almost like they're waiting for him to overachieve, and then, okay, but if he does, then they're in their mind, well, wait a minute, he's doing this without massive investment, so are we really going to do it? So it's kind of a double-edged sword for them right now. I do think they're going to be better. They should be better. It's his job now to stir that drink with all the newcomers, but they're bigger, they're deeper, he feels pretty good. No one's replacing Bruce Thornton specifically, but they've got a lot of good pieces, but he's got some momentum. He talked about that last year, and he's got to build on that, but it's funny how they're kind of giving him a little bit to add to his momentum, but not going all in. It's almost like, you got to prove to us that you're worthy of the investment. But then if he does that, are they going to be like, well, he's doing it without the investment. Do we really need to? Like, it's a push-pull kind of deal. So I find that interesting. We'll go over it as we go throughout the show. We'll come back and we'll hit a little bit of football with you because I haven't gotten your opinion on this. And this is the poll we're going to put out today. TLC and I brought this poll to the table. Dear Browns fan, can Deshaun Watson win you back enough where you'd be okay with them offering him a new contract? That's next. Rothman.
Join our resident gambling degenerates, Dave Biddle and Scotty Vegas, for On the Money. Sunday mornings at 9.
Presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Columbus.
Must be 21. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-589-9966.
The Fan. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Mostly sunny to partly sunny skies today with our temperatures getting into the mid to low 80s, and there will be a chance of showers and thunderstorms as we head into the afternoon and early evening. That could linger overnight, otherwise mostly cloudy with lows down into the 60s, and then for Friday we will see a chance of showers and thunderstorms develop. Otherwise expect mostly to partly cloudy skies with highs near 80 degrees. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 Weather Impact Forecast.
Bobby Carpenter demands that you watch Morning Juice on YouTube. If you don't, Tito will move into your house.
Live at 6 a.m. on YouTube and streaming on the Fan app.
Now you can watch Rothman and Ice.
Go to YouTube and search 97.1 The Fan.
Rothman is wearing the pancake makeup, so you might as well watch. Back to Rothman and Ice.
Has the poll been sent out into the cyberspace?
No, it has not.
Oh.
I will do so.
What was happening during the break?
The second you... I thought that we were going to do it together.
Oh, a tandem jump.
A tandem bicycle ride.
Turn the keys at the same time, huh?
Yes.
Yeah. The double-seated bicycle?
I don't think I've ever been on one of those.
And I think the guy...
I don't aspire to.
The person in front probably has to do most of the pedaling, because the person in back could just coast. The person in front wouldn't know. I guess you'd know by the fact you're not moving very fast. All right.
Yeah.
Kind of the rowboat situation.
Well, you know, I always thought
the front.
I always thought the motorcycle with like the little like side.
Oh, the passenger
side car. Like that was always extremely like you're going to get a motorcycle, one of the coolest things, but you're going to have this stupid little sidecar. Like, come on. It looks lame. You don't really see them much anymore, but I used to see them all the time.
I thought it would be fun to ride in the sidecar. Wouldn't it? It's like a kid.
Oh yeah, as a kid. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Dog.
Yeah. Right. Oh, okay. Yes. Sidecar. I'm not trying. Yeah. But like adults. See, like a man, and then another
full fledged adult,
and an adult man like in the little thing. I'm just
I
like,
don't think you could fit. I don't think you
just
could,
get your own bike, man.
Can you fit a full fledged adult in a sidecar?
Depends on the size of that adult.
Yeah. Usually they're built for.
We get Pat Murphy in there. So, I'd say it's too early. It's too early in the day for that. Sorry, Pat.
All right. So here's the poll. All right. We worked this out hours ago.
Yes.
But we have to turn our key at the same time.
I pulled it out of the drafts. I have it sitting here ready to press.
So what does it read?
It reads, Dear Browns fan.
I like that.
Can Deshaun Watson win you back enough to want to offer him a new contract?
Boy,
Would you like to rephrase?
No. Go ahead. Sorry.
Your two options are yes, if he's good enough. And your second option is no. Fool me once.
Shame on you. Fool me twice. Shame on me.
You're not gonna fool me twice.
But
fool me, we can't get fooled again.
That's right. You wanna know the greatest part of that story?
We don't get fooled again.
That I said that on the air. I dropped a we don't get fooled again. And TLC goes, wait a minute, how'd you know that? How do I know it? It's the who. What do you mean? How do I know it? He goes, well, I worked in St. Louis, and we had a host that used to say that every time we played this. And I thought it was his original quote. That was the greatest part of that story.
I thought he was misquoting George Bush. And I'm like, what are the odds that Rothman is also giving the exact same misquote of George Bush? Come to find out it's a song.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes, it is.
All right. I've been on this for months, and I'm starting to kind of slide into the we'll see category, but I'm not there fully. I've always thought originally this was counter to everything you should want to do, but I understand they've wasted a lot of money on him. And when Haslam dropped it was a big swing and a miss. You thought that he'd never play again in a Browns unit. He'd never be in orange and fudge again. And then you think like, okay, well, he's healthy now and we've spent millions and maybe we can recoup some of those dollars, or maybe the starting quarterback is still on the team and we don't have to look to 2027. But I thought, well, wait a minute, you kind of like Shadur. So you're going to stunt his growth for a year by playing Deshaun, and then Deshaun's just platforming for his next job somewhere. And then you're back where you started, where you've stunted Shadur a year, and then you're just back into the draft. And so I always thought like playing Deshaun was counterproductive. And so I think this poll is going to go that way. I think it's going to go probably 80-20 that the no part of it, that fool me once. Like, I just can't emotionally get involved anymore with Deshaun Watson as a fan. I think that's where this poll is going to go, because we haven't seen him play yet. They probably, I would say fans aren't even assured that he would make it healthy through a season. Then the other counter to this is, how good's this team going to be? Like, how good could he look on this team? And that's not through any fault of his own. Like, how good can he really look for fans to say, because what's it going to equal, Dave? 6 wins at best? And so if it does, are they going to hand him $40, $50 million to say, you know what? You're a different guy. Second act looks good. Let's go. It just seems off to me.
It seems very off to me. It would take a stellar year, in my opinion. It wouldn't just be a good year. Like, if he has a good year statistically and they finish like 9-8, I don't think that's enough. Reading Browns comments, like Browns fans comments on various message boards, like, can't speak for all Browns fans, like, they don't like this guy. Now, winning cures all, so if he has some crazy good year, that's what I mean, though. It would take, like, an insane good year. It couldn't just take a good year. I agree with you 100%. If I'm the Browns, they've already traded Myles Garrett, and I would trade Denzel Ward, assuming you can get a good package for him, which I imagine you could. If you're going to trade Myles Garrett and you're building for the future, don't be half in on a rebuild. Go all in on that rebuild. You know, trade Denzel Ward. Start Shedeur Sanders this year. Find out what you have in him. If it was me, I just would have ate the money and just cut Deshaun. I just would have cut him. I think I'd be shocked if he has a great year this year. Could he have like a decent year? That's possible. We saw what he did at Clemson. We saw what he did with the Texans. His third year in the league, he had a phenomenal year with the Texans. So we've seen him do it at the NFL level. We saw he was an absolute star in college. So it's possible. I say it's highly unlikely. If I'm the Browns, I find what I have in Shedeur Sanders. I'll be surprised if he's the long-term answer. And then if things go south this year, guess what? You're in prime position to get your quarterback next year. Now, if you're a Browns fan, the good thing is if you do have like a pseudo good year, you know, even like, I don't know if 7-10 is a pseudo good year and you're not, you know, in one of those top three spots, they've got so much draft capital, Anthony, they can move up and probably get the quarterback they want, unless whoever has the number one pick absolutely wants a certain quarterback. So I would embrace the tank. I would have Shedeur Sanders as the quarterback, but that's not what they're going to do. They're going to start Deshaun Watson. I mean, that's, so I'm just saying what I would do. But yeah, if I'm a Browns fan, I that's a heavy no for me, because what are you going to do? If he has a good year, you're going to reinvest in him when you're finally out from under what might be the most disastrous trade that we've seen in sports. And now there's some others that are like, you know, others receiving votes. I mean, you got to mention Herschel Walker.
Yes, you don't have to, but you do.
I mean, the Dallas Cowboys won three Super Bowls because of that trade.
Wonderful. So
we have to mention that. And there's been some other bad ones too. Russell Wilson. I mean, when the Broncos traded for him, I mean, there's been some really bad ones. When I say sports in general, Luka Doncic, I mean, unbueno. But that's one of the worst we've seen. So I think the Browns now, they need to just cut bait with him after this season and find their new quarterback.
They probably will. They've kind of restructured. It's helped them a little bit. It doesn't really matter that he has admitted that exchanging three first-round picks, a fourth, and a few more, or whatever he did for him, was a huge mistake. He admitted that. But the difference is he's still on the team, and they are struggling at that position. And they have an exit strategy, I think, for next year. That's why I've always said this seems counterproductive. If they catch lightning in a bottle with him again, and if he plays well, and if he stays healthy, then the difference is you're not continuing the old contract. You're not saying, okay, well, at least we're making up for some lost dollars. You're actually giving him more. You're putting more faith in someone that you've lost faith. Now, can he earn that back in one season or a half a season with a new coach? It's not jiving for me. I mean, the Browns restructured his contract to create space. You cut him outright that you talked about. That triggers this accelerated dead cap charge. That's more than $130 million. Like, that's, Russell's was what, 85? Like, that almost, it's, honestly, I think this is the only strategy is keeping him on the team and maybe and keeping him healthy
and maybe
by not playing him. Well, I don't know about trading.
Maybe that's the idea.
Yes. Well, that could be it. If someone, but does he have enough that anyone would
not
take
now,
a chance on him? Like, he almost has to play to be trade worthy.
That's maybe what they're thinking. Because I would just go with Shedeur. Find out what you have. If I don't think Shedeur is the guy, but find out for sure before you get, you know, a first-round quarterback next year. The thing with Deshaun is maybe they're thinking, Anthony, they can start him for 6 weeks or whatever it might be. Team gets desperate for a quarterback, and they can at least recoup some of their losses from what was a disastrous trade. Even if they get like a third-round pick, if you're a Browns fan, you'd be like, heck yeah, let's get anything we can for this sunken cost. So maybe that's what they're thinking is we're going to start Deshaun. We know we're not going anywhere this year. And if he starts out somewhat well, teams get desperate for quarterbacks, maybe they could trade him.
They couldn't have cut him before June. They couldn't have. That entire $130 million plus goes to a dead cap this year. And that was not going to happen. So he's still there. Now, we had Mary Kay Cabin on yesterday, and I asked her point blank, is it his job to lose? You'll hear that answer in 2 minutes. Rothman and I.
Remember the old days when football used to have an offseason? Well, we at the Fan think that really sucked. That's why we bring you Austin and Berm, America's number one resource for Buckeye football conversation, is voted by Fake Surveys Incorporated. Catch their daily podcast called The Beat and their breaking news podcast, Snap Judgments, as they broadcast live from Roosters on Mondays, and they come right to your house and massage your tender areas. They'll do it all. Austin and Berm on the Fan's YouTube channel and 10TV Plus.
Rossman and Ice is sponsored by your local Pella Window and Door Showroom on Gemini Parkway. The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Miss a minute of Rossman and Ice? Check out the podcast.
Type in Rossman and Ice wherever you get your podcasts. Download and subscribe.
Back to Rossman and Ice.
All right, so the poll is out there right now. We launched it. Predictions?
I'm guessing Browns fans are saying like 86% no, or 86 in it.
All right.
Where were we at?
My initial response was 80, but when you said that, I might even lean higher than that.
Yeah, I won't be surprised if it's in the 90s, but I'll go. And you might have some people trolling.
The contrarian fans,
Bengals fans would never do something like that. I mean, maybe a Steeler fan would do that. Or a Vikings fan. Steelers fans
locally are voting yes. Sign him for another contract.
Yeah, exactly. Give him all guaranteed, like $300 million. Why not?
TLC, what's your prediction? I'm leaning now, maybe going up to like 90-10 on the fool me once, like a no on 90.
If I were a Browns fan, I would be in the fool me once. Fool me, can't get fooled again. So I'm I'm with you guys, man. I know it's not, I should say something different because it'd be fun, but like 80s and 90s for sure.
Do you think there's a chance? How long did you put the poll out for? Can we do it all through tomorrow?
A day, yeah. Okay. 24 hours.
I'm wondering if you could have the first ever poll where it'd be 100%.
You'd have some troll in there.
Yeah, you'd have to have somebody throw one in there.
If there was like all like legit Browns fans that were like giving their true intent, like I would buy that. I could see, because every Browns fan I know is like, screw this guy. Like, I wish he wasn't still on the team.
You know what? I think there was a poll that we put out one time that was basically 100%. I got to figure out what it was.
I mean, we're talking about one of the worst trades in sports, so it's not surprising the Browns fans, who know their stuff, even though they have to deal with, you know, not a great franchise, but Browns fans know their football. Yeah, that doesn't surprise me that, like who is the Browns fan out there that's like, yeah, man, Deshaun Watson's our future. I haven't met him.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to go full Gruden, but I think I believe that there's part of the fan base that says he's still there. And he's got some motivation to control his own narrative now, to rewrite his history a little bit. The timing is going to be the biggest problem. This is it for him. And I don't think there's going to be enough runway or enough success on this team for Browns fans to feel like, absolutely, we still have our guy. The other part about this is, would he even want to stay? And they'd have to blow him away with an offer that would dwarf any potential option where he'd say, yeah, I'm staying in Cleveland. I think we also have to look at this from his point of view. He may be just counting the days to just get out of there himself, just for a change of scenery as well.
Well, I don't know, because a lot of that's injury-based, though. Like, he missed a lot of time. I mean, look, not that the Browns are in position. I mean, maybe he was watching all of last season saying, I'm better than this 5-12 teams. So there's definitely something to that. But I don't know if Deshaun Watson would have as sour of feelings towards Cleveland as Cleveland Browns fans would have towards him.
I agree with that. Well, yeah, 100%.
But why would he want to play for the fan base if they're done with him?
Like, I mean, both just are true. But
the Browns have the first shot to extend him, so it's the quickest money.
Yeah, I think both sides don't like each other, maybe, but I think the Browns fans have a stronger dislike for Deshaun than maybe he. I think deep down he's got to kind of understand why a Browns fan doesn't like him. Like, Yeah, it's just that's a thing. I know they would have had to eat all that caps, but they're not going anywhere this year anyway. Like, I just would have got rid of them, but they're going to keep him for one more year and try. And again, though, maybe Anthony, if the goal is, hey, let's put him out there, maybe, you know, there's a 30% chance he could play well and we could trade him, then that's actually a good strategy. If you're a team then you could put Shadur in there after you trade him, find out what you have in Shadur. Know for sure entering next year, is Shadur our guy, or do we need to go and get a quarterback in the first round?
That's the whole point on just playing Shadur. Just honestly, just play him.
Just play him.
And then feel what you, or see what you need to see. I mean, even before the Achilles injury, Deshaun wasn't good. So, I don't know. The other part is that, so on the Nightcap podcast, NFL legend Chad Johnson did an appearance. And he believes that it's Deshaun's team. Now, I pointed this out yesterday. He does have a tough start with the Tampa-Jacksonville roadies. I made the case yesterday that you might want to be sitting in the two-hole on this team and let that part of the season and not be the starter out of the gate against those teams on the road. But most guys would be like, I want to start. It's my job. You got to take it from me. But here's Chad on this.
Cleveland Browns fan or not, Deshaun Watson is the starting quarterback for the Cleveland Browns. The job that Deshaun Watson is going to get, Uncle Joe, it is his job to lose. He has 6 weeks to make sure that team is playing above or better than whatever the expectations may be for that team and that quarterback. If he's not, Shadur Sanders will fall in line as the backup and be the starter for the remainder of the season.
6 weeks. So game six. They're at Jacksonville. They're at Tampa. Home against Carolina. Home against Pittsburgh. At the Jets. Home against Baltimore. So most likely, this team's going to be 2-4. I'd say most likely. That'd be almost, I'd take it in a way.
Yeah.
1-5, depending on how he looks, that could be how they determine it. We asked Mary Kay Cabot, who covers the team. I asked her the same question after watching minicamp and hearing and talking to people. What does she think? Is this Deshaun's job to lose, you feel, yet?
No, I don't think so yet, actually. I think that Shadur kind of caught him from behind, pulled sort of even with him, and I think it's going to be a pretty heated battle in training camp. I don't think anything's changed since we last saw Todd Monken when we walked away from minicamp. I still think it's a two-way battle between these guys.
Mary.
That's interesting because she had said earlier, I know things can change in sports, obviously, but she had said before OTAs that she thought Deshaun was the leader in the clubhouse. Yeah. So
that's right. Mary joined us yesterday.
So she caught him.
Hey, Shadur caught up.
Yeah.
And listen,
I love
think
when Maddie called her Mary, by the way. Didn't add the K. Because I looked at him during the interview, and because I'd never heard it, I wonder if she prefers.
Mary Kay? Like Stephen A?
Like I always refer to her as Mary. Like Mary I think during the interview, I was calling her Mary Kay, and he was just saying Mary.
Because it's not just an initial. It's K-A-Y. Yeah. It's that's Mary right. Kay.
I guess.
Okay, yeah. That's
K
a little different.
Than the first
yeah,
name
does the K
last?
Go with the first name or the last?
He I think had
the
K, as,
unless,
it's
unless,
not
it's
a hyphenated
unless it's hyphenated,
Mary.
It goes
no, it's
with the
not.
First name.
I don't think so.
She's Mary Kay.
K Cabot.
Just Mary. She's not. Her and Maddie have a special relationship. She's just Mary.
He went just Mary.
Abbreviated basis.
Oh man.
I've never heard her referred that way. I always said Mary Kay.
Yeah, but it's interesting, man. And even if you look with this situation, exactly. She has a pink car and everything, pink Cadillac. Even if Deshaun was a little bit ahead of Shadur, I'm giving that job to Shadur. If it's that close, no. If you're Monk and you're a rookie coach, you're not trying
if
to tank.
You're the Monk.
You're not trying to tank. You're trying to win, so it looks good on your resume. So I get that. But like, if it's close, if it's super close, I go with Shadur. If Deshaun's clearly better, they'll go with Deshaun. But if it's close and Deshaun's a little ahead, I would go with the second year guy. Mm. Yeah.
I think actually Monken has a little more runway than people are saying. I don't think they're trading Myles Garrett and then saying to Todd Monken, okay, go make it work. Right. We gave you Jared Verse.
Right. You get 1 year.
Like, honestly.
He's got at least, I mean, it would have to be like Hugh Jackson completely go off
the
rails.
It would be like Freddie Kitchens. It would have to be
right.
The disaster.
And he would still get 2 years. There's no, I mean, it would have to be something off the field or something crazy for him to get fired after 1 year.
We have received our first vote for yes if he's good
enough. All right, so the 100% is not happening.
That was for me just to spice it up, though.
Bengal fan trolling. Well done. All right, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back with Don Waddell,
Columbus Blue Jackets president of hockey ops and GM. Will he tamp down the noise or will we let the smoke billow? Rothman.
We at The Fan have created a show where you can be a homer, a hater, or whatever you want to be. Sunday mornings at 8.
It's The Fan Call-In Show, presented by the Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Columbus.
Must be 21. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-589-9966.
The Fan Poll is sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub, home of award-winning pizza and $2 tall boys. All day, every day.
You're listening to Rothman and Ice on 97.1 The Fan.
All right, here we go. NHL draft coming up tomorrow night into the weekend. And a lot of movement around the league. It's been an exciting time. We just went through an epic Stanley Cup final between Carolina and Vegas, and a man who is very close to that Carolina team as well, but he's the GM of our squad, and he's the president of hockey ops, and he's Don Waddell, and he joins us now on the Bryant Heating and Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Big Don, welcome. This is really nice of you. I appreciate it.
No problem. It makes my day to be with you guys.
Well, it's fun for us, but, you know, it's a tough one, right? Because we hear the noise, we see the smoke, and there are countermeasures that are thrown out, like, well, there are people in the NHL media who are just trying to drive something that isn't there. But, you know, you did meet with Zach not long ago, right, after he wins the Norris. And I thought it felt like you guys had a positive conversation about the vision and the future. And then I guess my question would be, why meet again? Like, what happened? Because obviously the vision hasn't changed in 2 weeks from your point, so kind of reassure us or take us through that procedure. You did meet with him not long ago. Why would this come up again so soon?
Yeah, I met with him actually the day before the Norris was at breakfast with him, the day before the Norris was announced. And we did. We had a very good conversation. You know, and since then, you know, there's been a lot of noise around the league, of course. And, you know, the question that, you know, that I'm trying to get the answer to is, you know, long term. We got 2 years left on the contract. If the mind's made up that it's time to move on, you know, then we have to think about it from a hockey club standpoint. But, you know, we're not at that point yet, and we'll continue to talk to them. And just, I think it's important to stay in connection not only with your players, but particularly your top player. And just make sure that the way the league is going right now and seeing some of the players that have moved around, that we feel like we have a fair chance moving forward with Zach.
So when you're meeting with him around the Norris, you didn't discuss commitment or his mindset, or he didn't intimate anything about that, and that's why you feel... Did you call the second meeting post-draft? Did you reach out to him and say, okay, now let's discuss this part of it?
Yeah, well, that got a little bit probably blown out because I have not scheduled anything yet. I said my plan was to meet with him as a representation after the draft, so we don't have anything scheduled yet, and we'll figure that out here. You know, the focus right now in the next few days, the calls I'm taking on other deals that we've been working on, and, of course, the draft. So we'll get to it, you know, and see where everybody is. And, you know, again, it's not a decision that comes lightly from either side. And, you know, we got an obligation here to try to keep moving forward, and we'd like to move forward with Zach. And we try to make sure we're all on the same page as we try to do that.
Okay. Well, that tells us something, because there was that, right, Elliot Friedman, who's very credible and puts this, that you're going to meet, that this is scheduled, and that's why we all kind of opened our eyes like, okay, they're meeting again, and how come the vision wasn't the same a couple of weeks ago? But I understand where you're going. Teams are getting smarter. You have to give yourself some time to figure out if he's all in, and these no moves clauses are tough, and obviously I'm going to speak for you. I'm sure you have intention of wanting to extend him when you can, and just finding out, is there something about what's happening in the NHL now that you feel is more than a coincidence with guys that are requesting? He hasn't requested anything, correct?
Correct, yeah. Yes, we discussion with his representation, but nothing too definitive yet.
All right. But you would need to have time because of a player of this caliber, you could get a relative haul for him at this point. I mean, he's had an incredible year, incredible couple years, and the summer he had with the gold medal and winning the Norris, like that's, his value is incredible at this point. Correct?
Correct. And just coming off the Norris Trophy, which is the best defenseman in the league. And, I'm sure that teams will be lining up if we get that point. And, we just have to see where it goes because nothing says we have to do anything. We have 2 years left, but we also know that if we're not going to get him signed in 2 years, that's a huge asset that we can't just walk out the door and start over with that. So it's something that we have to discuss. And, I think the agent I know well, and he's pretty open about things. So we'll get to where we need to get to here in a very short period.
Would you think it's good news to Jacket fans that you didn't have to have this supposed second meeting before the draft tomorrow, that you were able to table it?
To me, first of all, with any of our players right now that we're talking about trades, we're not looking for draft picks and prospects. We want to make our team better. If I was to trade anybody off our team, if they get calls, I have lots of guys, I tell everybody, we need players. We're not looking to add more draft picks to this year's draft or future picks or prospects. We need players for our team. So nothing would change in that case. So the draft really doesn't have effect on any of our players getting traded at this point if we make any decisions to trade any.
Hi, Don. Switching gears, I want to ask you about Caden Lindstrom. I know he'll be returning to Michigan State for another season. How is he coming along?
Yeah, he started off the year a little slow. First of all, his back is completely 100%. He's in the weight room every day. He's coming in here for development camp. Beginning of the year, when he first started, he got a high ankle sprain, which set him back 3 weeks. I was up there half a dozen times and watched him and met with him. We think missing a year of hockey, that the biggest thing was to play the whole year pain-free, which he did. So he's having a great offseason here, and I think the right decision for everybody was made to return to Michigan State next year. This year he got very little power play time because they had a big line there, which was the best in college hockey. And so he'd get 15, 20 seconds of power play time. So we're hoping then, it's up to him. Of course, the coach is going to put him in position to succeed, but he's got to take advantage of it too, that he can take that next step and be more of a, the power forward. We saw that last year. He got frustrated when he didn't score early. And I think that was hard on him because he used to put up a lot of points. So we're looking for him to have a big year this year at Michigan State.
And last year you guys got Jackson Smith, of course, with the 14th pick. Same pick you guys have this year. He's looking like a steal. I know it's early, Don. I know he's returning to Penn State for another year, but that's looking like a heck of a pick for you guys.
Yeah, he's here. He came in early. He's been here. I just actually met with him downstairs this morning, and he's put on weight and pounds, and he's going to be ready when this college season ends. So hopefully it doesn't end until the Final Four. He's going to be a pro player, and he skates. I hate to compare him to Zach, but he skates like Zach does. He moves the puck. We think he's going to jump right into our lineup and be a force for us for many years to come. Like any young players, take some time to learn the league and that, but his upside is unlimited right now. We feel great about that pick.
Don Waddell with us, Columbus Blue Jackets GM, president of hockey ops here on Rothman and Ice. So I assume you're not sitting on your hands. You're trying to do some things and make some swings. I know that. I'll ask it point blank. Is Marchenko available for the right deal? It sounds like you've gotten calls.
Yeah, I've gotten calls. I have not made any calls on Marchi. I've gotten calls, and my job as a GM is to listen to offers. And, we've had a few that aren't even close to what he means to our hockey club. So, he's an important player to us also, or our leading goal scorer the last few years. And, I said, our job is, if we have a chance to make our team better, we got to look at it. But in his case, I think it's going to be hard for somebody to come up with something better than what he is. Again, you can get a lot of pieces and deals like that, but when you trade the best player in a deal, you never really win the deal.
Do you feel like that this year, you know, you got Rick back for a year, and it feels like a little bit of a show-me year to Zach? Like, almost like he's willing to, you know, continue his contract and play, yet the improvements that you make might be a way to sell him on the long term?
Well, winning always helps everything, right? Let's face it. We've made big strides the last 2 years, but we still haven't got the ultimate goal of getting in the playoffs. So, you know, that's our goal when we start the season, obviously, is put ourselves in a position to compete for the Stanley Cup. And, you know, you can talk to players forever, and players want to be parts of successful organizations. So certainly that would be a big step in our favor if we can make the right moves to put us in that position to take that step.
And you feel he's entitled to have knowledge of that, meaning that as your best players, you say, or one of your best players, that he would be involved in knowing your vision and how you intend to improve the team?
Well, I think, yes, I think that's smart. No, I'm very careful about calling players about players we're training for, because everybody's got different feelings. You know, I got a great support staff around me and a scouting staff for a reason. So we make those decisions, but we all know that, you know, if we could add some scoring and add some upfront help, that would be important to all of us. So I know where our holes are, and I know where everybody felt that we need to get stronger and better, and we're going to try to fulfill as much as we can.
Excellent. I know you got meetings and you sandwich this one in. I appreciate it very much. Good luck in the draft, and we'll talk soon.
Always a pleasure to be with you guys. Have a great day, and thank you for having me.
Awesome. Don Waddell, oh my, president of hockey ops, GM. All right, I'm not going to tell you that he extinguished the fire. There's some smoke there, but
he's very open for a GM, though. He's not going to say everything, yeah, but like, for a GM, he is about as open as you could be. I love it.
He didn't drop the, it's all due about nothing, though, that the media, like, but he did say that he doesn't have it actually scheduled, but he plans to talk to him. That's essentially the same thing. We'll come back, top of the hour, Rothman and I.
Live better.
Broadcasting live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios, driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good afternoon. I'm Tyler Danberg. Meeting with the media today, Ohio State AD Ross Bjork said they're discussing plans for significant improvements to the Woody Hayes Athletic Center. Bjork detailed the project includes expanding the football locker room, training room, and meeting room while building a new office complex and weight room. Bjork said the project will cost about $125 million while it's 18 months from breaking ground. World Cup, the U.S. faces Turkey tonight at 10, looking to finish 3-0 in Group D play. After missing Friday's game against Australia, Christian Pulisic said he's ready to play a part in the match. NBA Hornets are trading star LaMelo Ball and Josh Green to the Timberwolves for Naz Reid and a series of picks. Baseball, Reds are out before visiting the Pirates Friday at 6:40. Guardians also out before welcoming the Mariners Friday at 7:10. This update is sponsored by Germain Toyota for unbeatable service and sales. Visit Germain Toyota on the corner of I-70 and Bryce Road or online at germaintoyota.net.
Anthony once ran the table on the World 9-Ball Champion.
Coincidentally, Maddie is out looking for a Magic 8-Ball. Signs point to, this is Rothman and Ice.
I think it was, where can I find a good 8-Ball? I think that was the exact quote back in the day. We cleaned it up with Magic. Rothman and Ice, Anthony Rothman, Dave Biddle, the cannon behind the glass. TD at the update desk. Everybody's here. Appreciate Don Waddell coming on, sandwiching us in before his meetings on the draft. I do think they're in the dead zone this year at 14, though. I think that's a piece he would like to attach to a player and make a trade if he can. This NHL draft is pretty top heavy. And while you mentioned Jackson, where he got him last year, and he was their guy, and he was available there, you keep the pick. This year, it feels like unless that happens again, lightning strikes again, that's a dead zone pick at 14 in this particular season. By the way, I saw this, that Caleb Williams of the Bears attempted to trademark the word Iceman. Did Maddie block that?
He should have.
Because he's been temporarily given the boot. No, I think it was Maddie. The U.S. Patent and Trademark Office has refused the Bears quarterback's application for Iceman.
The fact that he even did that is just weird to me. Like, you're trying to trademark Iceman when you were not the first one to have that nickname.
Yes, you and I are old enough to know about George Gervin, the NBA Hall of Famer, who I had the famous Nike poster as a kid where he's sitting on the ice throne and it says Iceman. I didn't even know it belonged to him. Does it belong to him?
It does. He's the Iceman.
Is it Chuck Liddell?
Well, I always thought it was George Gervin.
It's not.
And one thing he can do is finger roll.
Due to an application for the same word by Hall of Famer George Gervin or a trademark possessed by UFC Hall of Famer Chuck Liddell. Instead, the United States Patent Office saw too much similarity and a likelihood of confusion in a trademark filed in 1988 by Lacrosse Footwear for insulated boots. Okay. That I didn't know. I guess they're based in Oregon. They own the trademark. It's not one of these guys.
Really?
Yes. An Oregon-based footwear company owns Iceman for the name for one of its boots and boot liners.
I think I can put the Iceman thing on the screen.
We may not even be... That is it. That's the poster that, I had as a kid.
Had?
Yes. You can't even see... By the way, the throne is ice. And he was sitting there with the two silver basketballs. He's in the silver warm-up. That is a great...
Kansas. Canvas, acrylic, metal, HD metal, wood, whatever you want.
Amazing. I'll tell you what my favorite one was that I had as a kid was the Larry Bird Nike poster of him sitting in the nest. Can you find that one?
I can definitely find that one.
And then the Supreme Court with all the guys dressed up as judges. And the Dr. Dunkenstein was my favorite. I've got a lot of favorites, apparently.
My favorite growing up, I had a life-size Michael Jordan. And it was basically like a, to measure my height as well. So it was both things. I had like a legit, 6'6" Michael Jordan image in there. And, used it to measure my height as I was growing up.
A growth chart, if you will.
A growth chart.
The nest on top of the nest above the rim.
That's it.
There you go.
That's Larry Bird sitting in the nest. Just said Bird.
With the so this is a Converse logo thing. Because I see the hat matches the shoes.
Right, so they must have... This must be the counter to the Nike poster.
You said you want to which one, other one?
See if you can find Daryl Griffith's Dr. Dunkenstein.
Ooh.
With the smoke coming out of the basketballs. Louisville, Kentucky.
This is good stuff.
This was another great poster. I don't know. Kids don't. Do they have posters anymore, Dave? You would know this.
Yes, they do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if the sports fans
on
like
the wall,
lean in
on
nearly
the back
as much.
Of the door.
I mean, my gosh, we would turn our various bedrooms or
SI covers,
dorm rooms. It'd be like the Sports Hall of Fame in there. Yeah, exactly. My bedroom, like in high school, had just like my favorite Sports Illustrated covers just all around the top. I'm nowhere near that creative now that I'm an adult. I don't do anything like that at home, but yeah, Sports Illustrated covers used to be great. Illustrated used to be great.
Can you find that one, or is that one toast?
I got it. I'm just trying to put it up in a way that is...
Be careful.
Palatable. Mm-hmm.
Did you like Larry Bird?
Oh, it's palatable.
I love Larry.
No.
When
I was a big
kid,
Sixer guy.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm showing our age. Remember the Dr. J versus Bird video game? Oh, yeah. That was Dr. J every time. I didn't like Bird.
They finally got him. The whole Celtic aura with McHale and all. They just won all the time, and it was always the Celtics and Lakers, and I was a big Sixer guy, and just being, they were a little bit of an underdog in that era, but I mean, they had great players.
And you couldn't be a Bulls fan at the time.
No.
This is before the Bulls were.
That's right.
They had a team, kind of.
No, we'd go.
And then Jordan arrived.
Yeah, well, yeah. And that's right, and that's a little bit of why I like them is because of Dr. J, and then... The fact that they couldn't beat them, and then they finally did.
83?
They finally did.
Yeah.
And the SI cover was Dr. J jams the jinx. And he's got the windmill, he's getting ready, and it was great. That was the Moses Malone, that was that team that finally broke through and got him. But it was always Boston. Honestly, it's eerie to me how close I viewed them as I did the Patriots when they were winning. that it was almost like they were just always going to win.
And I think the Lakers won maybe one more than they did during that stretch. I could be wrong, but it did feel that way.
You did find it. I did. That's the second one in there where he's holding
it. They got to open the ball like there's a lab experiment going on.
Dr. By the way, may have been the best nickname ever. Dr. Dunkenstein. Daryl Griffith.
You know what's funny is with me being, you know, born in 1999, I've definitely heard that nickname. I could never have told you who the actual person was.
It's awesome.
What was the Supreme Court one you said?
So Nike did a Supreme Court judges poster, and they were all dressed, and it had like, I don't know, I assume it had 15 or so, I don't know. Ooh. But it was all the guys, and the big guy was a guy who played for the Bulls when I was a little kid named Artis Gilmore. The A-Train was his nickname, and that's the guy who we all looked at as Chicago fans back then. And I don't even know if I could... I mean, Dennis Johnson's in there.
I was about to say, I'm looking at these guys. I can't name a single one of them just off their face.
Danny Ainge, was he in there?
No, he wouldn't be in there. I think Paul Westfall.
Okay.
It's possible. He played for the Phoenix Suns.
The late great.
Yeah. That's awesome. There were some great posters. There was some in the 80s, man. It was, did you remember the Air Force One poster that had all the guys outside the plane? It was like Michael Cooper and Moses Malone and
that sounds
Jamal
familiar.
Wilkes, Michael Thompson. There was one that was called Air Force One. The Dominique Wilkins. They were great. All these are awesome.
Like,
man, should have kept them.
That?
Should have kept them. Yes, that's Air Force One.
With the plane in the background, they're all in aircraft suits.
The other one that you
$225 if you want it.
The other one, the $225.
He's already got one.
I probably had three of them. All right. The one with Patrick Ewing, Madison Square Garden with the German Shepherds, and it was like security. There was one I had. I had them all.
Yeah, you were the poster master.
Yeah. Well, that's what you go to the mall, you bought
a poster. I had a decent amount, but you were taking the cake here. I love it.
Yeah. Jordan's was good. The Final Frontier, the space. He was holding the moon as a basketball.
You're a huge movie guy too, so I imagine there were some movie posters.
Speaking of a movie,
this one's cool.
Yes, there's the Ewing. What does it say? What security does it say?
It says protected by Ewing security. Yeah. Opponents enter at your own risk.
Yeah, that's the one with the dogs.
That's the one Jordan laughed at.
Did he?
I'm kidding.
All right.
Just. I can't help myself.
It's funny. I think they use the same dog in the Carl Malone one or something. Like the mailman delivering. He was knocking over this mailbox and there was a dog there. Oh, those are classics. Speaking of a movie I was watching the other day, you know what? I just looked up another one, which is amazing. Moses Malone. I forgot I had this one too. He did a Moses, like a real Moses. So he's in the Red Sea is parted. He's in the middle. There's basketballs everywhere. And the staff was a reverse Nike swoosh. And I never really noticed it as a kid. And as I got older, I thought, wow, that was genius. But it's just Moses. And he couldn't wear his normal uniform. It was just his plain uni.
Look down.
Yeah. There it is.
Man, TLC is on fire.
Man, you are the finder.
I only call Cole TLC when I'm like filling in on this show. Every time I see Cole, I'm like, "What's up, Cole?" on this show, it's like, "What's up, TLC?"
Yeah, exactly. My alter ego.
When in Rome.
Yeah. The weird ones. There were some awkward ones, like who did it? James Worthy. So when there was a show in the 80s called L.A. Law, I don't remember.
Oh yeah.
Anyway, so they did one with him as a lawyer, and he's just basically in an office with this very attractive secretary behind a desk, and he's just sitting there in like a double-breasted suit. That was it. It was a little weird. The Supreme Court one was good. Do you like the Supreme Court one, TLC?
Yes.
That one's pretty awesome. I used to be able to name all those guys.
This doesn't look terrible.
That's a little awkward.
So not worth $149.95 for
that's me. What that one is?
Yep.
Wow.
Sportsposterwarehouse.com. Uh-oh. Pop-ups.
Yeah, be careful.
Yeah. Incognito browser.
We'll find out exactly what you've been searching for. all right. So we're going to come back, and we had Schefter on yesterday, And we talked about the Sorsby situation. I want to get your take on whether the NFL actually contradicted themselves here. Rothman.
The Reds are on the Fan's family of stations all season long.
If you don't listen, Terry Francona will ride his scooter to your house and yell at you.
Your home of the Reds. The Fan. The Fan 2 and the Fan 3. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Mostly sunny to partly sunny skies today with our temperatures getting into the mid to low 80s, and there will be a chance of showers and thunderstorms as we head into the afternoon and early evening. That could linger overnight, otherwise mostly cloudy with lows down into the 60s, and then for Friday we will see a chance of showers and thunderstorms develop. Otherwise expect mostly to partly cloudy skies with highs near 80 degrees. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 Weather Impact Forecast.
Just when you thought afternoons couldn't get any dumber.
You fellas been doing a bit of boozing, have you?
Common Man and Tinny.
Weekdays from 3 to 6.
Your home for dumb. The Fan. Maddie was a big Browns fan. Scratch that, we mean he's a big fan of the former Browns.
Oh, yeah.
The Baltimore Ravens. This is Rothman and Ice.
All right. It's kind of getting to be an old story now, but it was new yesterday when the NFL... when they obtained the letter from the general counsel of the NFL that basically said, "Dear Mr. Sorsby, we're not buying what you're selling," and that you didn't have, there's just not enough completed records of the NCAA's investigation, and you were trying to petition for the supplemental draft, and your lawyer or your team didn't provide enough materials to know where the investigation, how deep it goes. It was more of, they were kind of soft serving the gambling thing. Yeah, it's an addiction. Let's have some sympathy for the kid. Texas Tech stood by him. The only thing that I was surprised about was that the NFL could have said to their teams, like they do with all supplemental drafts, buyer beware. Buyer beware. We're going to suspend this kid. He's not coming in free. He's going to be suspended. If you want to spend draft capital on him, just know he will not be available to you.
This right whole away. Year? Oh, right away. Well, so like Terrell Pryor style, like maybe
well,
a six
game. Well, he got what, five or six?
Five or six, yeah.
And this could have even been more. But maybe teams would have been like, you know what? We'll stash him. We'll stash him for a year. We don't need him right now, but we want to have him. We want to guarantee having him now versus waiting for the draft. And the NFL could have done that. I praise them for not doing that, because this is the one thing that they probably felt like would get them, at least from a PR standpoint. Nothing can hurt the Shield except for you're letting in a known gambler.
Who gambled on his own team.
Yeah. A player who has direct access to things. And we don't trust him yet. And the other thing they said yesterday, these are my words, not theirs, there's no one player that's bigger than this league, and there never will be. And you certainly aren't. And what you did, now the hypocrisy comes in here, which is, how do you define what's bad? This guy, violence, worse things, drugs. Like, there are guys that have been led in this league who have broken rules and had violations of integrity and all the character problems out the you-know-what, and this is the one they couldn't bend on. And I'm glad they didn't, because honestly, if you can't stick your head in the sand, this is the only thing that could take them down. And they have killed players who have gambled already. Even guys that have even dipped their toe in the water on fantasy or whatever, you're toast. Guys that have made mistakes on checking out prize sites or whatever while they're on the team's Wi-Fi in their parking lot.
Jameson Williams got busted on that, which was BS, but like, I guess technically he broke the rule. He was betting on like NBA, like from the team locker room. and he got suspended for that. So yeah, I mean, it's interesting, Anthony. It's definitely been the story that keeps on giving. And like every time I thought I had a a pretty good grasp on what was next. I was completely wrong. I'm like, okay, now he's going to the supplemental draft and the NFL will allow him to do it. Anthony, I even made jokes like, oh, is Goodell actually going to do what he did with Pryor and Tressel and suspend him? Goodell's like, I'm going to do one better than that. I'm not even going to let him play this year. And I like what the NFL is doing here. They're not banning him for life. They're saying flat out, like, if you, I mean, they said they made a lot of good points, a lot of heavy points. The main one I took away was you had no intention of entering the NFL supplemental draft. You wanted to be at Texas Tech until that turned out to be untenable. Then you decided, oh, my fallback plan is the supplemental draft. No. And I don't know why I assumed the NFL would just let him in. Good on them for not letting him in. But again, sit out the year, try to rehabilitate your life. Next year, enter the regular draft and see what happens.
So they've reduced, remember they revised their gambling plan on guys that did what you said, that didn't bet on the sport that they were involved in. Because all those three guys, Nicholas Petit-Ferrer, Jameson Williams, Stanley Berryhill, they were able to come, they were suspended six games originally. The new policy knocked it down to two. Because it was non-NFL sports.
How do you feel about that? I'm okay with an NFL player betting on the NBA. Now the argument is, well, even though it's not their sport, what if they went to college with, you know, a certain guy who plays basketball and they're buddies and he's giving them inside info? So I get it to an extent, but like, man, I feel like NFL. Now, listen, these guys are like, most of them are like multimillionaires. It's not a big deal. But like, if you're an NFL player and you want to bet on, let's say, U.S. Open tennis here in a couple months, I feel like you should be able to do that. You should not be able to bet on the NFL. But being able to bet on other sports?
I don't know if I'd have to check this out. I'm wondering if it was because they were within team facilities.
That's the rule. You're right.
Yeah.
They could do it on their own. You're right.
They could sit at a U.S. Open and do that.
You're right.
Now, the minimum suspension for gambling on NFL games went from 1 year, and betting on your own team has been raised to 2 years.
I'm surprised that's not lifetime. Pete Rose would probably be like, 2 years for that? Really? Yeah. Not lifetime? And as somebody who grew up, like, you know, when I was a little kid, I loved Pete Rose. My dad's favorite player. I mean, that broke my heart, you know, like everything that happened with that. And like, it is. We all know it's the cardinal sin. And I get Brendan Sorsby saying he only bet on Indiana to win. But that's not completely true. There were a couple of bets where he bet on the passing yards for Indiana to be under.
He knew the game plan, maybe.
Exactly. You know the quarterbacks. You know the game plan. So that's a little shady. And even if you believe Pete Rose, and I tend to believe it because the bookies backed him up on that, he only bet on the Reds to win when he bet. But there are many days he didn't bet on either. He didn't bet on the Reds. That signaled to the bookies and really their friends, okay, Pete doesn't have any action on the Reds tonight. That must be him feeling like the Reds are going to lose, so you might want to bet on the other team. So even if Pete wasn't throwing games, and I don't think he was throwing games, it was still pretty bad.
And he may not have been throwing them, but he was managing them with lack of integrity.
Yes, and I think he deserved growing up, I think he completely deserved the punishment that he got.
He lied, too. That hurt him.
Yeah, it took him forever to finally admit it. If Brendan Sorsby was allowed to play, that would have been a travesty, in my opinion.
Yeah, the other thing, you know, with Pete, only bet on them to win, was the sum the same every time? Couldn't have been.
I don't think so.
Couldn't have been. Right.
I don't think so. And some people say, how do we know for sure? We'll never know for sure that he only bet on the Reds to win. But I will say, some of the bookies that testified against him, they did back him up on that. They're like, yeah, Pete only bet on the Reds to win, but he wasn't betting on 162 games. So there were several games he was not betting, which, again, signified to the bookies, Pete's not real confident on the Reds tonight. So, yeah, I mean, like, good on the NFL, good on the Big 12 filing that lawsuit in the middle of the night that changed everything. Texas Tech was like, we're going to die on this hill. We're going to die on this hill. They filed that lawsuit, the Big 12 did, at 1 a.m. the next day.
Yeah.
Texas Tech's like, Brendan, you got to get on with your life here.
TLC heard me every day saying, how long are they going to stand by their man? Like, how long are they going to do this? And they did it until that. And they tried to play the sympathy card. They tried to play the...
He didn't kill anybody.
Yep. I think that was actually in the presser.
That was the dumbest thing. Yeah, Joey McGuire, the head coach. Yeah. I'm like, well, of course, this would be a criminal like situation. He'd be facing like prison time. No one is saying
the era that we're in now, and that's where maybe the hypocrisy comes into play. But I've said before, gambling's for the fans. It's not for the players. Just because the NFL is in bed with sites and they're gaining money off it. They're just, that's just good business. They know this is in our society now, and they're reaping the benefits from it, and there's more interest in the game because of it. Amongst regular people, I'm not advocating for you. If you don't want to do it, don't do it. If you want to do it, do it. But they're saying that just because we gain from gambling doesn't mean that it's a free-for-all. It's for the people that aren't involved in our sport. It's for you, the fans, to stay interested in however way you see fit. And this is the one thing they couldn't do. They, like I said, they could have said to their teams, buyer beware, he's coming in, he's going to be suspended. If you want to spend draft capital on him, that's your problem. But I thought it was very smart for them to say. Now, it looks like it's just going to be a year away. He's going to be eligible in the draft, and unless he does something between now and then.
I'm okay with that. What about you?
Yeah, feels right.
Yeah.
Feels like that's the year of punishment. One year banished away from the game. Can't start his pro career. All right, we're going to come back. We'll talk a little Buckeyes. And I've got this question for you. Will a star emerge at Ohio State and run away with the job? Tell you what that means next. Rothman
and Today.
Rothman and Ice is sponsored by your local Pella Window and Door Showroom on Gemini Parkway.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Hey, kids.
Anthony once did magic for birthday parties. See, when you say it out loud, it doesn't sound so bad. Back to Rothman and Ice.
Who holds birthday parties for kids? Moms. What's wrong with being a magician at that time? It's a perfectly sane thing to do. All right, so I was thinking about this the other day with Arthur Smith here, and everyone kind of questioning what the offense is going to look like, and, you know, can they revise the running game? And we've been so hell-bent on talking about Julian, and will he run, and he should run, and all that. I think it's more of, they do have running backs. Last time I checked, they have running backs at Ohio State. And if they block for them, things will be okay. The whole Julian thing is the instinctual runs, the moving the chains. You see an opening, you go through your progressions, or you see where you can pick it up. Nothing is more frustrating to a defensive coordinator than a quarterback who breaks contain. There is nothing worse. I've been around them. I'm telling you.
It's third down. You're getting ready to get your punt. Yes, yes. And you break their backs. Yeah. And I part of that's on Julian. I think a lot of that's on Ryan Day coaching that out of his quarterbacks, because we've heard even Justin Fields said. Now, in Ryan Day's defense, like, the backup quarterbacks when Fields was here were like chugging off and Gunnar Hoke 1 year in 2019. So I get it. But he even had to tell Justin Fields, don't run too much. Now, Fields ran a decent amount. CJ Stroud's on record saying Coach Day told him not to run. So I think a lot of that's Ryan Day coaching that out of his quarterbacks. But again, what we're talking about, Anthony, is once or twice a game, man, go pick up a cheap first down. Or even if it's not a first down, if it's first and 10 and you're rolling out and nothing's there, instead of throwing the ball out of bounds, if you feel like you can get 5 yards, slide, get out of bounds. I don't want Julian Sand getting like trucked by a linebacker. If you can slide or get out of bounds without getting hit and get 5 yards, as we all know, second and 5 is a heck of a lot better than second and 10. So hopefully we'll see a little bit more of that this year.
Yeah, I mean, first down is as important as third down in a lot of ways, because if a defense can slow you down on first down, it puts you in a tough spot. You're throwing on you. They know what you're doing. And so I was looking at just the past on running backs, and, you know, Bo Jackson was hurt a little in the spring here and didn't play, but I'm wondering whether they're going to have a bell cow back, or this is going to be by committee, because it's so rare to fall into what they had with Quinshon and Travion, a couple of 1,000-yard backs. It's maybe equally rare to have a J.K. Dobbins and a guy who's carrying it 300 times for 2,000 yards. And I don't, when you have other guys, and he had Master Teague and Justin Fields ran a lot at that time as well, but they leaned into J.K. And
only the Ohio State running back to ever go over 2,000 yards in a season is J.K. Dobbins in 2019. Yeah. Yes, sir.
And to have 300 carries, I mean, it's an incredible workload. And I don't even know if a running back wants that anymore. Like, Travion was more than welcoming to Quinshon. It took a lot of the load off him. However, it's also most running backs want to be the man. And this year, Bo Jackson has a chance probably to be the man. And it's just started me thinking, are we going to have a, 175 carry guy, or could he be a 250 carry guy? Do you ride him in certain games when the momentum's there? Like, how much are they going to help evolve him yet preserve him? Because I could see him being a J.K. Dobbins type, but I don't even know if it's necessary.
It's not necessary this year. He's going to be somewhere in between. I think it would be closer to bell cow than committee. He'll definitely be the starter. There's only been five true freshman running backs to ever go over 1,000 yards at Ohio State, and he's one of them. And they've all turned out really well. So I am very bullish on Bo Jackson, but Isaiah West is going to play. I was impressed with Jacoby Jackson a lot in spring. He got all the first-team reps. He's a seventh-year senior, which is going to be a thing of the past now with the five-to-play-five rule. Actually, I have two seventh-year seniors with the tight end, Hunter Welsing, also on the team, the transfer from Northwestern. Jacoby Jackson's going to play, and I think Legend Bay, maybe not a lot early, Anthony, and they'll move him around. He'll be maybe a little bit of a, you know, can play a little wide receiver, can be like an H-back type. But he's in the running back room. Legend Bay's going to play as a true freshman. So those other three backs are going to play, but Bo's going to be the man. I mean, he rushed for almost 1,100 yards last year, averaged 6.1 yards per carry. He's added weight. He is going to be better as a sophomore than as a true freshman. I think it's reasonable to assume that. So, but yeah, I don't think he's going to get 250 carries, but he will get over 200. I would guess somewhere around 225. And obviously, we know it depends on how many games they play. Do they get deep in the playoffs? Do they, you know,
that's assuming the they make the point play, about preserving guys.
And Ryan Day is really like, you know, that's at the forefront of everything he's thinking is trying to preserve the guys. And maybe he went a little too far with that last year with the slow pace of play. Then all of a sudden you get behind against an Indiana. You got to play catch up. Not that easy. You get behind against Miami. You got to play catch up. Not that easy. So I think they're going to have a little bit more tempo this year. It's definitely going to be a somewhat of a committee. But again, I think Bo's going to be closer to a bell cow than just the starter of a four-man committee, if that makes any sense.
Yes, it does. And he's good enough to force other guys to transfer. Like, he's yes. that good. Like, I think guys know. Like, don't take it from us. Like, take it from the guys that are in the room. Ask James Peoples. Ask guys that, that's you know, true. That know, that are around it. Like, kind of know. And then they know the plan that the team has for him. So I do think that he burst onto the scene. It wasn't long before you kind of knew. Now, at the end, he was playing better defenses. The offensive line was a little overmatched at times, certainly against Indiana and Miami.
And he was not good in pass pro.
And he was not. Yeah. And so, there, you know, it's kind of like having a bad free throw shooter on the court in crunch time. You need him for the rebounds, but he's a liability when he gets fouled.
Like a Mitchell Robinson. Yeah.
So it's right. So you're kind of, so I think it was at that point where they're in bad game scripts or game scripts that, and it didn't match. I also don't know if he was hitting the hole as well as he did earlier in the year, but that goes to the competition jumping up. And I think this year, and I've said it before on the program, you know, everyone talks about this schedule and how crazy and tough and woe is Ohio State and what are they going to do? Like, first of all, they're going to be favored in probably every game but their first one, or their the one against Texas, I mean. And they're almost a pick'em, or maybe...
Maybe at Indiana. I mean, right now it's a pick'em.
It's very possible that they could be a dog there, or close to it, Oregon here. Like, who knows? But my point is that Ohio State may be better equipped. This is hopefully, because, you know, you don't get three cards to burn. Like, you can't have it go south. But that they may be such a better battle-tested, scarred team going into the playoff this year than going into what they did last year. And it's not like they couldn't have won. They lost two very close games. First of all, the Indiana game didn't impact their ability to win a national title. It didn't. In fact, if anything, maybe it would serve as a wake-up call like it was a year ago, but it was a different team. And Miami was, they were a force at that time. And the pick six doesn't help. And now you're playing from behind. But they had found their way in that game. Then you line up bad on a punt, and everything go. Then the momentum gets thrown back. But it's all about Ohio State was a formidable contender last year. They were, you come out on the other end of the Miami game, and who knows, maybe you're a repeat champ. Like it was, it felt, or you, and by the way, you know what everyone was clamoring for was, how, let's make Indiana beat us again. Like that's, honestly, that would have been very difficult probably for Indiana to do. Now, could they have done it? Maybe. But it was setting up for that. But the one thing they missed was that the offensive line couldn't match up at the end.
And maybe this year going through this type of a schedule might exploit some weaknesses, find out where their strengths are, and they'll be better.
No doubt about it. And I look at those last two games. A, you've got to give a lot of respect to the two best teams in the country last year, Indiana and Miami, and they had great defensive lines. Indiana had a great defensive line. Dare I say Miami had an even better defensive line. Like, it was tremendous, the best defensive line in the country. So what went wrong for Ohio State? I think it was three-pronged. Yeah, some of it was on Julian. A lot of it was on the offensive line, in my opinion. But Julian deserves some blame, too. I think he's getting too much flack. He went from a guy that if they won the Big Ten championship game and he played better than Mendoza, he would have won the Heisman. That's how close he was. Now, that didn't happen. But the offensive line was getting their butts kicked against fantastic defensive lines. And then I think coaching played a role in this. The Brian Hartline timing could not have been any worse. I don't think it's any one factor. I don't even know how I would weigh it. I'd probably weigh mostly it was on the offensive line. But like the upheaval with the offensive coaching staff and having to kind of play musical chairs there. Julian wasn't playing well. If you want to throw in Bo, not, you know, being a good pass protector, like there were myriad factors, but, I'm bullish on this team this year. And Bo Jackson, you looked at, I mentioned earlier, only five true freshman running backs have ever rushed for 1,000 yards at Ohio State. Here they are. J.K. Dobbins, Maurice Claret, Travion Henderson, Robert Smith, and Bo Jackson. So if he ends up, you know, as good as like J.K. Dobbins or Maurice Claret, Travion, I know Maurice is only here 1 year, but my goodness, what a tremendous year. And Maurice ran for almost 1,300 yards that year, Anthony, and was what, playing half the season with like a shoulder that was hanging by a thread. So Robert Smith.
Didn't play in that Cincinnati game.
He didn't.
Yeah, he almost lost.
That was another one. He had a torn meniscus, missed one game. Missed one. Then he hurt his shoulder against Wisconsin toward the end. Had to deal with that. I think he might have missed one more game after that. And, man, is Bo Jackson going to be like a 1,500-yard back this year? I don't know, but I'm very bullish on him.
So in conclusion, he's somewhere between J.K. Dobbins' great year and his own year last year. So the over-under on Bo Jackson this year would be 1,500 and a half yard.
I would take the under on that just because of the other running backs.
Of course, and the teams they play.
And you want, that's a great point. And you probably want to get the ball to the best player in college football a little bit. You might want to throw the ball to number four.
Well, you got it almost 90 times last year.
He did. Yeah. He did. He did. I would.
Over 100?
My goal would be to get Jeremiah Smith 100 catches this year. Yeah.
That's right.
Yep.
All right, we're going to come back and we'll hit you with this. The best hockey player in the world may now have the most controversial coach in the world. You'll hear what he had to say about it next. Rothman.
All your favorite fan shows are on YouTube. Along with those fake YouTube ads like Chew This Gum and It Grows New Teeth. Experience the splendor of Bo sitting in his closet, Timmy Hall's gaudy gold chains, and Matty Ice wearing a coat in 90-degree weather. It's all there. Head to YouTube and subscribe today. All your favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
You have to understand you're listening to Rothman and Ice 97.1 The Fan. It's indubitable.
Thank you, sir. All right. It's nice when you can throw Frank in a closet and say, hey, do some things.
Anthony realized that Frank was the funniest man in the world.
That's right. So, I mean, this guy's living up to his name. Pun intended. I mean, it's the question he got at the presser, pun intended. Like, I'll give him the Olympics, but I've argued that in Detroit he underachieved. One cup. He was loaded. Absolutely loaded every year. Datsyuk, Zetterberg, Lidstrom, go through the whole team. He went to Toronto, did nothing. I think he's smart. He knows hockey. He's too smart for his own good half the time. And he plays games with players he doesn't have to. Now, they can't make this hire Edmonton without the approval of Connor McDavid and Draisaitl. They just can't. And it's a little bit like Torts. Just when you thought he was out, pulled him back in. And Edmonton has to win. And they don't care about PR. They don't care what happened here or what may have happened here. And Zach Hyman played for Babcock in Toronto, so I'm sure he... And it's one of those things that it's not like Edmonton should be this desperate. Now, I know they want to win, but you can't go to the cup final a couple years and barely miss and think that you're just a nothing team. Like, Knobloch did great job for them. It's one of those that they want either it's just not good enough. And whatever the culture shift in Edmonton is, McDavid is welcoming Mike Babcock's style. Now, his style is demanding, and maybe he can't reach into his old bag of tricks again. He's not going to do the old plug in the cell phone deal, and he's not worried about, you know, ticking off some prospect or somebody, because he's now he's got the ultimate seal of approval. He's got Connor McDavid. And so Connor McDavid is on board, and this is what he wants. A no-nonsense, old-school guy who will hold the best players accountable. And I guess McDavid and the rest of the Oilers leadership group got their wish. Will it be fun? Who knows? It could be crazy. There'll be a lot of people rooting against them now because of Babcock. And I don't know if he's the wrong guy. Maybe, like, now he hasn't coached in a long time. He never got to coach us. And I know he was playing that card like, oh, there was a lot of disunity. Well, I think you created a lot of it yourself. But anyway, here's Connor McDavid on having Mike Babcock as his head coach.
Because it's different. It's something that we've never had in Edmonton. And we've had a lot of coaches come through there, and they've all been great in different ways, and they've all failed in different ways. You know, Babs is going to be different. He's going to hold guys accountable. He's going to hold me accountable. Starts right at the top, starts right with me. And I want him to do that. It starts with Leo, and it moves on down to Bush and Heisey and Nuge and everybody. And you know, we want him to be hard on the top guys. And we want him to make, you know, everybody else better, including us too. You know, we want to be better. We need to be better. So, again, as I keep saying, we're excited about it. It's a new challenge.
Anthony, when I first saw the news that they were considering hiring Mike Babcock maybe 2 weeks ago, I was thinking, this is just them, like, kind of, like, pouting about the fact they can't hire Bruce Cassidy, who, of course, was fired by the Golden Knights. And frankly, should be able to. I mean, the Golden Knights fired him like right before the playoffs, what, like 8 games before the playoffs started? And now because he's under contract, he can't coach unless the Golden Knights allow him to, and they're not allowing him to. So I thought this was just the Oilers like pouting, saying, okay, you're not going to let us hire the guy we want. We're going to hire like the most toxic guy you possibly can think of. But no, it wasn't that. So this is going to be fascinating. I don't know enough about I know what happened. Some people think Babcock got a raw deal here in Columbus. Some people thought, no, this absolutely had to happen. My take at the time was I leaned more toward, even though I didn't know the whole situation, it probably needed to happen. I mean, the NHLPA came in. And it all started with this Spittin' Chicklets podcast, where they like...
That was part of it.
Broke the news on that. And was it Fantilli? Was he like the main guy? Allegedly?
That's never been publicized.
Because I know Zach and the veterans didn't have any problem.
Well, Zach came on with us during that time, and he, you know, a lot of these guys were trying to keep it together, because the Jackets wanted to keep it together. They hired the guy. Like, we're not going to, can we get past this? I think was the mindset. Can we all get past this? I don't know. Maybe they demanded Mike Babcock tuck his tail and go back to some guys that maybe he offended, and maybe he wouldn't do that. Maybe they just got to a point of that we can't get past this because, yes, the NHLPA, and there was another investigation on whether there's anything more than just people being offended in a certain way, and they didn't find anything. And so he's controversial for sure. You know what you're getting. A very arrogant, confident, accountable, tough, old school guy that claims he doesn't need this. You need him more than he needs you.
Accomplished. And, he's won a Stanley Cup. He's won at least one gold, maybe two gold medals as coach of Canada. So very accomplished now. As you mentioned, that the Red Wings were absolutely stacked when he coached them, but we've seen stacked teams in the NHL that don't win the cup. So
all the time, President's Cups winners go down.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens because the fact that he's got Connor McDavid so on his side, I mean, that's huge. And you're right. I mean, there's no way the Oilers would have hired Babcock unless McDavid 100% signed off on it.
Because they're desperately hoping he doesn't want to leave at some point. And so he's trying to win there. And that's important. So they've been so close. I think this would ring better for me if I didn't really know what he was about. Like, he's just, But they know better than I do. And if they want him, then they got him.
Like how he's about like just being like a hard
bleep. Just alienating everybody. And
he's kind of known as a bully, especially to younger players. Everybody says that he treats the older players, the veterans, the good players really well, is what I've heard. You know a lot more about hockey than I do. But I've heard he actually treats like, that's probably why McDavid and Draisaitl like him, that he treats those guys good, but he bullies the younger players. That's just what I've heard.
They had to admit it was a mistake, and the Jackets never wanted to do that. They thought they had kind of another torts on their hands, like it was a guy that was going to take them places. And it just, he went back to his old bag of tricks, and it just got out. I do believe that if he didn't have a reputation with certain guys, like Commodore, like Witt, like Biz, like guys that knew guys that played under him and guys they've experienced, because they just went scorched earth on him.
That's through Commodore.
And the Jackets could not ever get past it. They tried. They tried desperately. They trotted out their veterans. Boone, Zach, go on media. Hey, we're okay. This didn't happen to me. We're going to get past this. And they just couldn't sidestep it any longer. And now here he is. But, yeah. I mean, there have been former players that just have seen nightmare situations with him. But when I say that, there are the same amount of players who probably have described, like back in the day when you had guys playing for Bob Knight, and you feel horrible for some of the things that happened to some of the guys. But in the same half, you've got guys that say, I'm the basketball player I am today. I'm the man I am today because I played for him. And I think all of us who have ever had a tough coach can romanticize that time that you got through something you didn't think you would get through, and then you're like, you know what? I'm a better player for it. But, man, he is a wild combination of all of it. We're going to come back with a deep dive. We did have Don Waddell on earlier today, and we'll recap what he had to say about Zach's future next.
Rothman.com.
Broadcasting live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios, driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good afternoon, I'm Tyler Danberg. The Blue Jackets picked 14th in Friday's NHL draft, but noise has intensified around Zach Werenski's future with the team. CBJ President Don Waddell joined at Rothman and Ice today and said he met with Werenski before winning the Norris and plans to meet with him and his representation after the draft with nothing scheduled yet.
We have 2 years left, but we also know that if we're not going to get him signed in 2 years, that's a huge asset that we can't just walk out the door and start over with that.
CBJ picks 14th in the draft Friday. World Cup, U.S. faces Turkey tonight at 10, looking to finish 3-0 in Group D play. This update sponsored by RCDRV Supercenter in Heath, Delaware, and Pataskala, or at rcdrv.com. Coming up on Rothman and Ice, Gold Jacket Thursday with Mike Haynes right here on The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Most shows just skim the surface, but Rothman and Ice feel like the biggest story of the day deserves a closer look. It's time for A Deeper Dive.
Sponsored by Orthopedic One, Central Ohio's most trusted orthopedic practice. Find a physician or location near you at orthopedicone.com.
All right, back at it. Rothman and Ice, Dave Bidlin for the Iceman. Mike Haynes, Gold Jacket Thursday, bottom of the hour. Hall of Fame DB. All right, so we had Don Waddell on earlier today. I do believe there's a little smoke to this. What's reassuring, and TLC, you can maybe stack up the sound bites for me if you can. What's a little reassuring is that there's not like urgency. All right. That's what I got out of this. Because if there was urgency, and if there was urgency even from Zach's point of view, like this conversation or whatever conversation they'd be having would have been before the draft. Because if you could start stacking up and calling San Jose and getting 2 and 9 and whatever, I know he didn't want to trade players for picks, but if you start getting a haul that includes some top end dudes and Stenberg and all these guys that are in the top part of this draft, then I think that meeting or whatever meeting he wanted to have would be before the draft. So how this essentially is probably going to play out, and I've said this yesterday, Zach's been a great player. He's loyal to the organization. He's in his prime. He's had the summer of dreams. Gold medal, to be a part of the assist on the golden goal, to win the Norris, and to become a father. And he's, and honestly, it's been the perfect summer outside of he had to watch the playoffs. And that's tough, especially with everything he's done now in his career. And so I don't fault him for thinking, okay, this may be a show me year. Let's get involved. Maybe I'll be a captain. Maybe I got to see what improvements this team makes, and I can't get extended till next year anyway. And from the team standpoint, it's these teams are getting smarter. Like, they're giving themselves time to find out if he's all in. That only makes sense from Don's standpoint. And look what happened with Mitch Marner. The Leafs lose a 100-point guy for essentially nothing. Walked it all the way to free agency. You can't lose a guy like that. So if Z doesn't choose to commit or has even hesitation, it's smart for Don to try to find that out, because these things don't happen in a week. Like, Maddie and I were talking yesterday. He's like, oh, I trade him right now. I'm like, okay, you can, but you've got to give others a chance to get their ducks in a row to make a big offer. You want to create a bidding war. You could get a haul. He admitted that. You'll hear it in a second. Like, you could admit that both things can be true. And so my interest in the whole thing was, well, if you met with him before the Norris, why meet again? The vision didn't change in 2 weeks from your standpoint. So whose standpoint needed another meeting? And it sounds like it's just Don trying to make sure. Now, the NHL media and Elliot Friedman, when he reported that they were going to meet post-draft, sounds like it's solid intel. What I don't understand, if there wasn't a scheduled meeting, why that would become news. And you'll hear that from Don. But clearly, either Don is trying to maybe slow it down, dissolve it a little bit. Yeah, we're going to meet, but I don't have anything scheduled. There's no urgency. And it kind of slows down the story a little bit because it's post-draft. But you have to admit that there really wouldn't be any reason to meet again if you just met. There really wouldn't be, unless it comes from his side, which it doesn't sound like it's coming from Zach's side. Like, because if it was, I think they'd want to meet before the draft and say, hey, he's telling you right now, he's not committing. So he can waive his no move. Here are the teams he'd like to go to. Get a bidding war going and see what happens. Doesn't sound like that's where this is headed. So that's why it was important for us to have him on today, because there's been a lot of smoke. I don't think he reassured, but I also didn't think he gave out the opinion that Jacket fans should lose their minds over it. So that's kind of the synopsis of what I got from our 10-minute call with him earlier today. So TLC, line some of these up and we'll react to them.
All right, so let's just start here on if there has been a second meeting scheduled.
Yeah, well, that got a little bit probably blown out because I have not scheduled anything yet. I said my plan was to meet with him as a representation after the draft, so we don't have anything scheduled yet, and we'll figure that out here. You know, the focus right now in the next few days, the calls I'm taking on other deals that we've been working on, and of course the draft. So we'll get to it, you know, and see where everybody is. And you know, again, it's not a decision that comes lightly from, I'm sure, from either side. And you know, we got an obligation here to try to keep moving forward, and we'd like to move forward with Zach, and we try to make sure we're all on the same page as we try to do that.
The good news is they don't have to do anything now. Zach's under contract for two more years, as we know. They could let this season play out and then trade him next offseason or sign him. And the problem with that, obviously, is right now, if you're gonna trade Zach right now, the value is the highest it's gonna be. You have him under contract for two more years. He's coming off the Norris Trophy. I mean, if you're going to trade him, now would be like the best time, but hopefully everything gets resolved. My gut feeling is Zach's going to be a Blue Jacket for life. But as you mentioned, Anthony, there's definitely some smoke here. Definitely. I think I'm sure Zach, if I had to guess, I shouldn't say I'm sure. If I had to guess, I bet Zach is somewhat torn. We know he loves Columbus, and he would love to see the Blue Jackets put together a great roster. At the same time, he just won gold, and you know, a lot of his teammates on that team have either already did force their way out of their previous team or have since then. So I'm sure he's seeing that. That's playing a role in this, but my gut feeling is everything's going to get taken care of eventually, and Zach's going to be a Blue Jacket for life. Maybe that's wishful thinking, yeah, but that's my gut feeling.
That comes with the results. I can't see a guy in his prime, as good as he is, just throwing caution to the wind and saying, okay, I love it here so much. I think he got a taste of winning. I think he saw Tkachuk. I think he's seen Larkin. I think he saw Quinn Hughes, who had about a year and a half left, and Vancouver got a haul. So you can see this USA Hockey alum kind of meeting or being together, and you can start connecting the dots. People have done that.
It's the same thing that happened kind of with like LeBron and those guys when they went to the Olympics, and they were like, oh, and then Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh, what if we all played together? And like,
when you're in the prime of your career though, Dave, the window can close quickly.
Oh yeah.
And the only beef I think he would have, or maybe this is a legitimate beef, is all the coaching changes. Because they had a run with Torts and Lars and Shawzy and those guys. Like, that's the only run he's had. And so his next contract's going to be a big one anywhere. And the question he's got to ask himself is if this is going to be not mediocrity, but if it's going to be always a challenge just to get in and feel like I don't have a chance to win a cup here. This would be kind of the show me year, the year, because you can't blow your career as much as. Like, I don't think he'd want to do that. I think he's just too competitive. He's too good of a guy. He's got so much to play for and try to experience. And as an all-star, who's coaching us long-term? Like, he's got legitimate questions. And Don's going to have to try to put a team around him. And you can't nickel and dime that. So that's kind of where it is. What else you got?
How about, you referenced it earlier, his current value and weighing the long-term options?
I'm sure that teams will be lining up if we get to that point. You know, we just have to see where it goes because nothing says we have to do anything. We have 2 years left, but we also know that if we're not going to get him signed in 2 years, that's a huge asset that we can't just walk out the door and start over with that. So it's something that we have to discuss. And, you know, I think the agent I know well, and he's pretty open about things. So we'll get to where we need to get to here in a very short period.
I could be naive, but I think the best thing that came out of today's conversation was that he's not getting shipped now. He hasn't. I asked him even if he had requested. He said no. So they're not going to move him based on a no request. He's got a no move anyway. He'd have to give them a list. He'd have to waive it for these teams. Now, Don doesn't owe us that. He doesn't owe the public that right now. So he could just be playing us. But the plan here is to still meet. And like you said, he's under contract for 2 years, and he can't sign an extension until next summer anyway. So,
and the idea that if the Jackets would trade Zach, it would definitely be to a team that's ready to win. Is that team that's ready to win going to trade for Zach and then give up valuable assets that are already on their NHL team? I'm not talking about draft picks. I'm not talking about prospects, because Don's been pretty upfront. Like, if they do make a move, it's not going to be for draft picks. It's not going to be for prospects. It's going to be a hockey trade.
Yeah.
But if you're trading
a team that's a bunch of left-handed defensemen.
Yeah. Now, right. If you're rebuilding and you're trading Zach, I think the way to do it would be to get as many draft picks and prospects as you can. But if you're trading with a contender, let me ask, maybe you disagree with this. Would a contender trade for Zach and then give up, like, you know, three or four of their guys that are, you know, not their best players, but key guys on that team when they're already a contender? It doesn't seem to go
unless they had an absolute need there.
That's true.
And also that you're right, because Don said, I don't want picks.
Yeah.
I'm trying to improve this team.
Where if you're trading Zach,
you're retooling.
Yes.
Like, it's almost like you're breaking it down. He's not ready to do that. They're too close. And they feel that way. But anyway, we'll spill a few over to the next break and tease one of them. What do you got that's teasable over there?
I thought, piggybacking off of that, your question about whether or not Kirill Marchenko is on the trading block is also very telling about the future of this organization.
All right, you'll hear that next, Rothman and I.
T-Bone and Tybus would like to remind you that you don't have to get in your car to listen or put on pants. Tell your smart speaker to play 97.1 The Fan and experience the stupidity in the comfort of your own home. You're welcome. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
Mostly sunny to partly sunny skies today with our temperatures getting into the mid to low 80s, and there will be a chance of showers and thunderstorms as we head into the afternoon and early evening. That could linger overnight, otherwise mostly cloudy with lows down into the 60s, and then for Friday, we will see a chance of showers and thunderstorms develop. Otherwise, expect mostly to partly cloudy skies with highs near 80 degrees. For The Fan, I'm meteorologist Meredith Garfalo with the 10 Weather Impact Forecast.
Catch the latest from the world of Ohio State athletics. Weeknights at 6 on The Buckeye Show. New special guests in everything Scarlet and Gray, The Fan. Rockman and Ice present Pre-Snap Reads.
Sponsored by Dr. Mark Levy. If you're snoring and not sleeping, call Dr. Mark Levy today at 1-800-MORE-SLEEP.
All right, so you just joined us. We had Don Waddell on, GM for the Jackets. And there have been a lot of stories out there because when Elliot Friedman, the NHL insider, tweets out that they're going to meet post-draft about Zach's feeling on the future in Columbus, understandably, people are like, wait a minute, is this true? And if it is true, why does it need to happen? And that was my angle on it, which if you just met a few weeks ago, there'd be no reason to meet again. What did you not feel sure of a few weeks ago, unless that was just about the Norris and just being a good GM? And I think part of being a good GM is always being in contact with your guys and getting their feeling. And we've seen this has been the summer of guys forcing their way out of teams. And it's maybe a coincidence or no coincidence that it's the USA Hockey alum team, basically. And so what he told us is there's no definitive plan on the future. This is, you always want to know, and you want to know as soon as possible because that's his job. So they're going to meet in the near future. There's no specific date, he said. He's got to get through the draft first. But it hasn't stopped people from either accusing some certain national NHL media of creating a story that isn't there, and it hasn't stopped the other side of it, which is, okay, if you're going to trade him, where would landing spots be? Could it be Detroit? Would he go to Carolina? Would he go to Toronto? Would he go to Anaheim? Like, it's, there's all sorts of, because this is the new media that we are. You advance the story. You talk about, you speculate. That's what we do. And so it's not necessarily about journalism. It's about opinions. And that's what moves the needle now, is opinions. And so my opinion of the Zach situation is that it's good that this didn't happen before the draft, that they didn't have to meet now, because Don would think, okay, well, maybe I ought to try to look into this draft. But Don told us, this is me reading into it. If this is going to happen, we're going to know. He's going to do right by us by letting us know, and we're going to create a bidding war. We're going to use a great player to get a haul in return. We're not there yet. I don't think we're going to be there until after this season, and we see how it plays out. We see what improvements. We see who's coaching the team. Is Rick Stain going? Is he dealing with another coaching change? Have they taken another step? Did they make the playoffs? Are they going to make a run? Whatever is going to happen. Now, those are all big ifs, and I'm sure Zach is willing, this is my guess, to see if some of those ifs play out positively. But I did go further with the trade talk because he's certainly trying to help this team. And, you know, Marchenko is one of his great scorers, and there's a future there, and people are calling about him.
Yeah, I've gotten calls. I have not made any calls on Marchie. I've gotten calls, and my job as a GM is to listen to offers. And, you know, we've had a few that aren't even close to what he means to our hockey club. So, you know, he's an important player to us also, or, you know, our leading goal scorer the last few years. And, you know, I said, you know, our job is, if we have a chance to make our team better, we got to look at it. But in his case, I think it's going to be fine. Be hard for somebody to come up with something better than what he is. You know, again, you can get a lot of pieces in deals like that, but when you trade the best player in a deal, you never really win the deal.
That's, I think, right. That's the perfect attitude. A perfect attitude, because you'll hear sometimes GMs or directors of player personnel say things like, this guy's completely off the table. Maybe you should at least listen, even if you think it's 99.9, he's off the table. What's the harm in at least listening to the offers?
They don't want to trade him. Why would they? He just told you. He's been our leading scorer for 3 years.
He's awesome.
And he's 25, I think. So it's he's got to be mentioned. What he said was correct, which is that I'm not in a rebuild. I don't need to trade him. We're not a washed-up team. We're close. And I think that's why he would be in some ways untouchable unless the Godfather deal comes to the table. So they're going to listen. You never slam the phone down. And the deal's big enough. Okay, maybe. But and why wouldn't other teams ask for him? He's got a great shot. He's one of those guys that you can't teach that. And if he's got 40 goal potential, then you'd keep him. So it's that sounds like Marchie's staying put. So that's good. Did we max out on it?
No, we got a couple more here. Right. Let's do... you mentioned the show-me year. Mm-hmm. You brought up, is this the show-me year
to Zach?
On Zach Wierenski's mm-hmm. side of things.
Well, winning always helps everything, right? Let's face it. We've made big strides the last 2 years, but we still haven't got the ultimate goal of getting in the playoffs. So, you know, that's our goal when we start the season, obviously, is put ourselves in a position to compete for the Stanley Cup. And, you know, you can talk to players forever, and players want to be parts of successful organizations. So, certainly, that would be a big step in our favor if we can make the right moves to put us in that position to take that step.
I mean, it's right. It's real. The problem in the East, I mean, it's been so tough. I mean, I mentioned this the other day that the Vegas Golden Knights would have been eliminated if they were in the East. They wouldn't even have made it. They made a run to the Cup. So it's been tough. And when you're a 90-plus point hockey team and you're on the outside looking in, it's tough. And the collapse was tough. And they hadn't gone through that last year with Rick. All they were doing was winning. It was incredible. And when they started to slide in crunch time, they had nothing really to reach back to. We've been through this together. No, they hadn't. When he jumped in, all they were doing was winning. So, and they lost to some good teams down the stretch, and they let leads get away, which sucked. And that's the beginning of the end. But I think Zach is one of those guys that certainly likes it here and would love it to work here and is probably going to give it another year, is my guess, to see what improvements they make. If this was a Zach needs to meet with you because he wants to let you know now he wants out sooner than later, this meeting would happen. It would have been before the draft because you would have wanted to include all your possibilities. And so the fact that this is somewhat scheduled after the draft, it makes sense that everybody stay connected. I don't know how this got out, because if it wasn't unless Don is downplaying it now, that it was scheduled, but now it's kind of like floating because let's not create a storm. That could be going on, but I think the Jacket fans, while they weren't like completely reassured by Don saying, pouring water on this story, saying there's nothing to it. I don't know why. I mean, he's one of my great players. Of course, I talk to him all the time. He loves it here. Like, since he didn't say that, I don't think you can go all in on feeling great, but you also feel probably pretty good that it wasn't an urgent meeting that needed to happen.
I'm disappointed, Anthony, that we're not having the conversation this month about, which I was hoping we would have, is are the Blue Jackets going to package a bunch of picks and prospects and go get a star? That's what I was hoping would happen. And obviously it would take a lot more than the 14th pick this year. That's why I said, in addition to
a
player and prospects, additional picks. I mean, give up like, you know, 3-4 first round picks, do something like that to bring a star here. That's what I was hoping we'd be talking about.
Well, we'll find out. Draft's tomorrow. Maybe he'll swing something. All right. We'll come back in 2 minutes. Mike Haynes, Hall of Fame defensive back, on a Gold Jacket Thursday.
Rothman.com.
Rothman and Ice is sponsored by your local Pella Window and Door showroom on Gemini Parkway.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination.
Rothman and Ice present Gold Jacket Thursday.
Presented by the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
All right, welcome back in. It is a Gold Jacket Thursday. This man was drafted 5th overall by the New England Patriots out of Arizona State, went on to play 14 seasons. All he did was rack up 9 Pro Bowls.
and a Super Bowl ring with the LA Raiders, enshrined into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 1997. He is the lockdown corner. He is Mike Haynes. Your career was so great. Did you think that this was always going to happen? And when it didn't happen right away, how did that make you feel?
No, I didn't really think that it was going to happen, but it was a goal. And so my goal really started in college. I mean, if you really go back to my career and start when I was a kid in high school, our team was not that great. But I was fortunate enough to play in an all-star game in the city of L.A. And I was covering a guy at another school who everybody was there to see. And he only caught one pass, and it was for 6 yards. I didn't know anything about the guy. I had no fear of him at all. I didn't know anything about his speed. When I saw him, he looked like a running back to me, but just tall. And so after that game, I was surrounded by colleges that wanted me. And they were asking me, what was my grade point average? What was my score on my test and all these different things? And I didn't even know anything. I didn't know my GPA. I didn't know it. I hadn't taken the test yet. And so that inspired me to get that stuff done. I was very fortunate to get a scholarship to Arizona State. When I got there, all the guys that were on the team, they were all like state champions or city champions or co-champions. I wasn't on any championship football teams, and I had to prove myself. And so I think that really inspired me.
Your rookie year with the Pats, almost Hall of Fame worthy. Like, it started you on this path, the 8 picks, the fumble recoveries, the punt returns, the touchdowns, defensive rookie of the year. Why do you think your transition to the pros was so successful right away?
I think it was because, one, I didn't feel like I was going to a great team. I felt like I was going to have to really work my butt off to help this team be great. And so we had guys like Russ Francis, who was one of the best tight ends to ever play in the National Football League. We had Sam Cunningham, who had gone to USC, and he was a great running back in college, but he was more known for a blocker. But with the Patriots, he was a ball carrier. That dude was a tough guy to bring down. And we had great offensive line with John Hanna, Leon Gray. We had a great team on offense, and we had a great team on defense, and that defensive team was not getting the recognition that it really deserved.
He is Mike Haynes. He is the lockdown corner, Pro Football Hall of Famer, Pats and Raiders, with us here on a Gold Jacket Thursday. You made the playoffs a few times, as you mentioned. You had talent. But what led to you wanting out of New England?
Well, when I was drafted, Chuck Fairbanks was our coach. And I was really impressed with his coaching. And I think he wanted to continue to be our coach, but the owners didn't have the money to pay him. And so that was a bad sign for all of us. And that was the case for me as well. They couldn't pay him. They couldn't pay me. They couldn't pay other players. And so our team started to fall apart. And that's how I became a Raider. And I really think that I was one of the early guys who changed the way salaries were looked at. Everybody was looking at, oh, defensive backs is just ahead of kickers and punters. They don't really have a tough job. I'm going, wait a minute. You tell me who has the toughest job in the NFL. I said, I think it's the corners. You know, wide receivers, they're fast. They got great hands. They got great quarterbacks throwing the ball. And defensive backs don't have that kind of help. So I think I'm one of the early guys who helped increase the salary for cornerbacks.
I think you did. The fact that the Raiders had to sue the league and won and got you, and then you jump right in, and there's Lester Hayes, another lockdown corner. You guys together may have been the best pair ever.
Wow, I'm glad you said that. I can't even tell you how much I enjoyed playing with the Raiders. Because of the mindset, the guys that we played with on the Patriots, we all were just kind of starting to come into that mindset. But the Raiders had already been there. They already thought they were a great team. They weren't becoming a great team. And Lester, he was amazing. I studied film with him, and some of the other guys, Mike Davis as well. And that would help me change my mindset. And so when we'd go into a game, and I'd be look like we'd be covering a team that had a great quarterback and a great wide receiver, Lester would say, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. I'm going, that's interesting. I never really thought like that. I never thought what I might try to do and stuff. And so I've watched him and learned a little bit from his mindset, and that helped me.
In 1999, you were ranked 93 on the Sporting News list of 100 greatest football players. You were then ranked 49 on the NFL Network top 100 greatest players. He is Mike Haynes with us. The 83 Raiders beat Washington in the Super Bowl, a team they lost to earlier in the season, but you weren't there yet. You weren't technically in the revenge game because you didn't play the first one.
Well, one of the things that most of the teams did back in those days is they played zone. They loved to play zone. Lester and I played bump and run. So now we're telling everybody that is at that stadium or watching that game on TV, this is man-to-man. We're going to play man-to-man, and we're going to shut our man down. He's not catching anything. And with that attitude, we were able to play really well, and our safeties were able to play really, really well. And that changed things. And so Lester and I were able to shut down the other team's wide receivers and a quarterback who took a chance and would throw the ball. Because the guy wasn't open yet, he would throw the ball, and we would have a chance of catching the ball just as much as the wide receiver.
Art Monk, Charlie Brown, Alvin Garrett. I mean, that was an amazing Washington team, and you guys just took them apart in that Super Bowl. What was it like playing for an owner like Al Davis, who was also, I believe, the general manager?
It was a lot of fun because he would actually come out to the practices, and he would say stuff to us, you know? Like when I was on the Patriots, if the owner was watching us practice, he was watching from the building, looking out the window. But Al would be on the field, walking up and down the sideline, or he'd be in the middle of the field. Sometimes he would say something like, good job, you know. And I think him being out there on the field really made us practice and using all of our skills to show him we're good players, and we weren't holding anything back. We weren't going to let any receivers. Now, these are our own players, right? So a lot of times guys would let their own receivers catch the ball. We didn't. We didn't do that. And so only time we would let them catch the ball and when it was the offensive period. And so Al Davis was great in terms of helping the defense. Just by being on the field, that was enough to get the best out of us.
The Raiders' mystique of old had a rep of being dirty, right? Fair or unfair? Did you feel like that reputation was fair, that you guys could be at times a dirty team? And also how you fit in with that Raiders' mystique, knowing what the great Matt Millen thought of you, thinking you were just this professional, gentlemanly guy.
I don't know why they thought they were the, you know, dirty Raiders, but they all played to the whistle, you know. And so if a guy was going down and the whistle hasn't blown yet, he's going to get hit again, you know, even though he's already going down. But, you know, they weren't hitting them once they were down. That's what I would call dirty. The Raiders, they like to gang tackle. They like to try and make this guy think he didn't want to run the ball anymore. Like he might carry the ball 30 times during the game, but against the Raiders, he did not want to carry it 30 times. We like to tackle. We like to cover. It was a big deal for us. But it was, you know, every defense I've ever played in the National Football League, it was a big deal for. We always wanted to win on third down. We also wanted to win on first down. So if we could win on first down, then we can make that team throw passes on third down. And those were our two favorite downs.
He's Mike Haynes, 46 picks, Hall of Famer, class of 97. I read you wanted to be a receiver, but I thought if you did want to be a receiver so badly, if you were playing in this era, my mind goes to that you may have left ASU to go to a program that would have let you play wide receiver.
Yeah, well, I was going to leave ASU after my rookie year, my freshman year. My freshman year was the first year that freshmen could play on the varsity football team. And at Arizona State, they moved six freshmen up to the varsity, and I was one of the six. And they moved me to free safety. And I didn't want to play free safety. I wanted to play wide receiver. But I wanted to play more than anything else. And so when they moved me up to free safety, I played my tail off. I played really hard in practice. I did the best I could. And as a result of that, I ended up starting as a free safety. And I started off during the regular season upset, pissed off at the coaches for making me a defensive back, but not letting these other guys catch any passes in practice at my own team or during the game. And then I started to really see what the coaches saw. And it wasn't long before I realized I wanted to be a good defensive back.
You know what? I'd like to believe that you would have been a Hall of Famer as a receiver as well, Mike.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And I have the same appreciation for the same things you do.
Before I let you go, I want to tell you I'm fairly inspired because I lost a dear friend of mine to prostate cancer who was a receiver here at Ohio State, Demetrius Stanley, a couple years ago. He's done so much in this community, his family, with Brave Men, Inc. and helping men confront prostate cancer. I know he would be thrilled that you and I spoke today.
Well, I'm so glad he did that. And as you know, I'm a prostate cancer survivor as well. And I learned from sharing my experiences that I could help other people, and that turned out to be something that I've been doing now for the rest of my life.
Keep doing it, my man, and be well. Thanks for this.
All right. You too.
Thanks. Mike Haynes, Gold Jacket Thursday. What a player. What a story. And gives me a chance to also mention my friend Demetrius and his wife, Jessica, Brave Men, Inc. Go to the website. Check out the story. They decided to form Brave Men, Inc. to get men to go in for early detection, to get families to openly talk about health concerns and confront the loneliness and fear of it, and the legacy lives on, and it did again today. We'll come back with Tell the Truth, Rothman.
Salts.
In the old days when people lived to be 40, you only had one option for listening to your favorite show. But now, baby, radio, podcast, the Fan app, and YouTube. Ooh, just to name a few. Live or on demand. You have no excuses. The Fan.
The Fan Guest Hotline is sponsored by Ohio Heating and Bryant. Doing whatever it takes to keep you and your home comfortable. The Fan.
Tell the Truth with Rothman and Ice.
Sponsored by McDaniel GM Superstore. Driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive.
All right, Dave, this is something I was thinking about earlier today. And you know how much I love Moneyball, the movie. And it's not like big action movie, but it's a good movie.
Yes.
And there's some great scenes in it. And one of my favorites is Brad Pitt, who plays Billy Bean, goes to talk to David Justice and tries to find out if he can help him set an example for the young guys. And he's like, you know, save it for them. I know the game here. He's like, what are you, special? And he's like, well, you're paying me $7 million. I guess I am special. He goes, I'm not paying you $7 million. Yankees are playing half your salary. That's what they think of you. They're paying $3.5 million to you to play against them. And it's a great scene. And yes. Then he's like, listen, why don't we just be honest about what we both want? You want to stay in the show, and I want to milk the last ounce of great baseball you have in you. Let's do that together. And they come to an agreement, and he's like, boy, I've never heard a GM talk to a player that way. He's like, you've never seen a GM who was a player. And that's the exact truth. Not many were at that level. Anyway, it's a great movie, but I was watching it the other night, and there's a part of it that is way over the top. And it's Lisa Guerrero, who used to be in sports, Fox Sports in the late 90s, and a little bit of Monday Night Football sideline reporter in the early 2000s. And she plays a reporter interviewing the A's after they've lost all these guys to free agency, and they're just going to be a nothing team. And you've been in a lot of locker rooms. You've done a lot of press conferences. the whole demeanor of what they depict in movies for reporters, I like. It's hard hitting, tough questions, the coach is on the hot seat. But in real life, it's almost like the fans don't want that anymore. Like, it's almost like, well, that was a stupid question, or gotcha here, or whatever. Like, it's almost like it's reversed itself. Like, but in the movies, it's still like that. Whenever they do go into press conferences, always these tough, hard-hitting questions, and the coach squirms, or the and
that's a good point, because we had somebody in the chat before we had Don Waddell on today on our YouTube chat saying, "You guys better put him to the fire," you know. And then, but if you would have done that, you'd have probably 50 people in the chat saying, "Anthony, why were you like asking all these like unfair questions?" I think you're right. I think it has overcorrected.
It has overcorrected. So I was watching her do these interviews. Now, remember, at the time, the A's, you know, they were rebuilding. They had lost all these guys. They didn't have a lot of players that anybody knew necessarily. And it was like they depict her as this would never happen. Like, preseason interviews, she was going at them like they were supposed to be World Series champs. And so I had TLC, like, maybe can do the Sir Mix-a-Lot on the music. And so this was the Lisa Guerrero in Moneyball on some of the questions that she was asking some of the fictional players, but they were real players, obviously.
I think we got a hell of a ball club here.
Chap, are you intimidated at all today?
I wouldn't say I'm intimidated, really.
So, Jeremy Giambi, how's the team going to fare without your brother, Jason Giambi?
But, you know, as far as filling that role, the organization did a great job of bringing in some good young guys to fill that role.
Well, let's face it. I mean, they're getting a deal with you. The Yankees are paying Jason a whole lot of money, and you are coming here on a dime. How does that make you feel?
I feel good.
How are the nerves in your fingers?
You know,
I got to start with the age. 36 years old. How do you think your body's going to hold up this season? You spend a lot of time at strip clubs. You spend a lot of time partying. Do you resent all of the attention that you get off the field?
I don't. I love it.
You spend a lot of time in Las Vegas.
I do. I feel great. Like I said, I did a lot of work to get ready.
Excuse
for
me.
This
can you please get out of my shot? Sorry. Go ahead.
I know there have been some questions about my age and my declining skills, some say, but I'm here to prove that wrong.
I asked you if you were 100%.
It was good at the time, 15 years ago. It's weird that I think that now comes off as over the top. 15 years ago, that play, I asked you if you were 100%. I asked you if you were 100%. And then to tell some random journalist, hey, get out of my shot, please. Like, maybe that stuff did go on 15 years ago. It doesn't go on now.
No, you're absolutely
right.
Those
types of interviews preseason.
Right. That reminded me a little bit of the Mike Gundy, the famous presser, I'm a man, I'm 40.
Yes.
A little bit.
And so I read a quote today, and the reason I was thinking about this is this guy in New York put out a tweet today about journalism in general and why it's like people expect new media to be journalists. And who set that expectation, right? New media is not journalism. A lot of it's opinion-based now. But new media doesn't want to be journalism. And he writes, why would they? Look how we collectively treat journalists. Who wants that life? Better to stay puff and enjoy the spoils of access.
I ask myself all the time, like, well, what made me get into sports journalism instead of getting, like, a law degree or something? What was I thinking? My wife and I joke about this all the time. She's a teacher. I'm a sports writer. And I do various things. I'm not just a sports writer, but we kind of joke, like, could we have picked any, like, lower-paying, like, career fields? We played the game of life as kids. It was like, if you got doctor, lawyer, certain stuff, like, you're rich. If you did stuff like us, mm-hmm. You're poor. Like, and listen, like, we're doing okay, but so we just joke about it. But, yeah, I do wonder sometimes, like, what was I thinking? Like, I was just going to go into sports journalism and...
Well, you love sports. You want to be around it.
I wouldn't change anything, to be serious. I wouldn't change anything. I'm very, very fortunate.
And most of the people had to start at the bottom and work their way up, and there's fulfilling parts of that. But it just made me feel like things have changed even in 15 years. That it's not really about questioning to a fault. And there is a fine line that you have to walk on having access, but yet being real and tough and speaking for the fans and all that. And I wonder if we've lost a little bit of that because there's so much media now, everywhere, anywhere you look. And by the way, everything's under the umbrella of media. It's not necessarily that way. Anyway, that Moneyball thing popped out to me that if you try to do that in a movie now, it would come off a little over the top.
Yes.
And 15 years ago, I think it hit the mark perfectly.
Well, that's because since 2011, the watchdogs have gotten louder. Mm-hmm. And the morality police are quick to tell you you're a bad person.
Could be.
She was on the best damn sports show, period, right? Yeah, I remember.
Chris Rose?
Chris Rose, yeah. Tom Arnold. Stephen A. got his TV start was on there. You had John Sally on that show. Rob Dibble.
She was very popular at the time.
She was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Playboy found out, too. All right. Dave, it's good to have you in, my man.
Always good to be a show with you, Mr. Rothman.
Cowan Man and Timmy up next. Talk to you tomorrow. Rothman.